Hi, this is Shelby LaPree, station manager of Radio Power. Radio Power is an independent progressive radio network that is entirely funded by listener donations. As you know, for the last 2 weeks we've been having our spring pledge drive, and I'm pleased to report that we have raised 80% of our goal. To those of you who have made donations over the last 2 weeks, I'd like to thank you personally for supporting Radio Power. For those of you who have not yet made a donation, I urge you to make a donation on today, the final day of our pledge drive. As I mentioned, we have an individual donor who has pledged to match dollar for dollar every donation that we bring into Radio Power. This means that if you make a $20 donation, we will get a $40 matching donation. If you make a $50 donation, we will get a $100 matching donation. And if you make a $100 donation today, we will get a $200 matching donation. This is an incredible opportunity for us to raise the capital that we need to operate for the next 3 months. And I'm asking you to please help us take advantage of it. As I said, we've raised 80% of our goal, and I'm looking to raise the other 20% today. This is the final day of our pledge drive. This is a community-based radio station. In other words, if you make a few hundred dollars a week, make a $5 donation. If you make $500 a week, make a $50 donation. If you're fortunate enough that you make $75,000 or $100,000 a year, then make a couple $100 donation to support free speech and liberal progressive talk shows here on Radio Power. We are entirely listener-funded. That means that we do not accept any corporate advertising, no government subsidies. We are completely independent. And this allows us to bring you the hard-hitting liberal talk shows like Tom Hartman, Mark Levine, Tony Trupiano, Peter Werby, Guy James, and so many other great programs that we bring you on a daily basis. The majority of the money that we have to spend to operate goes to bandwidth, and we use a tremendous amount of bandwidth streaming these live programs to 20, 30, 40,000 listeners a day. So we are getting the message out to 30, 40,000 listeners a day. And this is a tremendous public service that I'm asking you to support right now. Please go to our website right now. Just stop what you're doing, take 5 minutes, and go to radiopower.org and click on the donations link. There you'll find that you can make a donation via any major credit card, an electronic check, or PayPal. It's all secure. It'll take about 5 minutes to do. Again, our website is radiopower.org, and click on the donations link. Your donations go directly to supporting our network. There's no, we don't waste money anywhere. It goes to servers, it goes to syndication fees, it goes to administration costs, and we are a very efficiently run operation here. And every dollar that you donate goes directly to expanding our network capacity. And as you know, Radio Power is one of the cutting-edge stations that focuses on liberal progressive issues. And I'd like to thank you for supporting our network. This is Shelby LaPree, station manager, thanking you for listening to Radio Power.
I just can't read the news. Another Bush in the White House got the double Bush blues. How can I bear it? I've just got one mind to lose. What a cruel deja vu. I've got the double Bush blues. Unemployment is back. People dying in Iraq, civil liberties under attack, and anything progressive is on the chopping block. and tax cuts for the rich, driving us deep in hock.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
It's crunch time for SBC Communications and the Communications Workers of America. The company's 100,000-strong union-represented service and support staff may strike as early as tomorrow unless terms for a new contract can be agreed upon. The two sides are still far apart on health insurance premiums for the current workforce as well as on issues of job outsourcing. If a strike does take place, SBC is expected to draft non-union staff and management to fill service and support jobs, including 12-hour shifts 7 days a week without overtime. That may run afoul of labor law, at least in states like California, where the rules exempt managerial and professional staff from overtime pay, provided they're engaged in their normal duties. Fixing phone lines and providing directory assistance may invoke this clause. SBC could try to get around this by petitioning the federal government for relief.
Thursday afternoon, more than 250 graduate students, undergrads, and clerical staff marched through historic Columbia University Library carrying signs reading Union Now. For the past 3 weeks, some 1,900 members of the Graduate Student Employees Union representing teaching and research assistants have been on strike. Columbia administration officials are refusing to recognize their union. Stephen Twilley, a second-year graduate student in Italian, says the university works because TAs do.
We are workers too, and just because we are also students, that doesn't at all get rid of the fact that we are workers and that these are jobs, and we don't have a choice to not take these jobs unless we're getting support from somewhere else.
Allegations of slave-like labor conditions in U.S. military camps in Iraq, this from Indian workers who returned home this month after making an escape. The workers say they were promised by a private contractor that they'd be put to work in Kuwait and didn't realize they were actually in Iraq until it was too late. Outside of mortar shelling and errant gunfire, the workers claim they were held against their will by the U.S. Army. One claims he was beaten by a soldier when he asked to go home. They also say they were paid less than a quarter of what they were promised for their work. The Indian government has formally demanded an explanation from the United States. Its ambassador to India says an investigation is now open into the charges.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study by the Environmental Integrity Project and Public Citizen found the nation's top power plant polluters are also Bush supporters. Only 5% of facilities produced 43% of sulfur dioxide, 31% of carbon dioxide, and 43% of mercury pollution. Since 1999, the 30 biggest utility companies have poured $6.6 million into the Bush presidential campaign and the Republican National Committee. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Writers used to sacrifice for their art, subsisting on stale biscuits and cheap wine, letting their health go as they wrote day and night. No such suffering for Carol Matthews, though. She's a British writer of what is called edgy romantic comedy novels aimed at young contemporary women. And rather than sacrifice, she has simply sold her artistic self to Ford Motor Company. In the latest intrusion of corporate advertising into every nook and cranny of everyone's existence, Ford has paid a pile of money to Miss Matthews in exchange for her pledge literally to write the company's products into her romantic novels. It seems that Ford is eager to pitch its Fiesta car to 28 to 35-year-old women on their way up the career ladder. Apparently, this is the very demographic that Matthews' books reach. Chick lit, it's known in the biz. So Ford has become a literary character. For example, in a special short story written for the company, she drops in a reference to, quote, whizzing around Buckinghamshire in Imogene, a rather snazzy Ford Fiesta, complete with 6-CD changer, air conditioning, and thoroughly comfy seats. Art meets ad copy, and ad copy wins by a knockout. Matthews, who also is appearing in ads for Ford, says she's not troubled by this corporatization of her work. Quote, "I've been very pleased with Ford in that they haven't put any constraints on my writing at all," she gushed. "Well, good gollies, Ms. Matthews, I'm sure they won't, as long as you keep writing breathless copy like that. But what if you tried to, you know, test your corporate freedom by writing something like, 'Whizzing around Buckinghamshire, my snazzy Ford Fiesta sputtered and died on me again, just as the 6-CD changer went on the fritz and spewed blue smoke in my face.'" This is Jim Hightower saying, "Who would buy a particular car just because some writer mentions it in a novel? And Ford wonders why it's falling behind Japanese car makers?"
Toyota owners, tired of paying high gas prices? Well, how about paying nothing? That's right. Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Plus, 1,000 more will win $50 fill-ups. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer to enter the sweepstakes. You'll get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota-trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and ask about our May tire and service offers.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void or prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 year old with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at Toyota.com/owners.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends. Happy Friday, Shabbat Shalom, TGIF. However you phrase it, it's the end of the work week. A beautiful day here in Vermont, by the way. It's just absolutely marvelous. I think I mentioned on Tuesday we woke up to snow, but today it's up to 70. Marvelous. Here we are, Tom Hartman with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system. Our telephone number, if you'd like to be on the program, is 1-866-889-8894, and we're moving our Brunch with Bernie segment from 1 to 2, the second hour of Friday, to noon to 1, so that our Sirius satellite listeners who listen to the first hour live and the second and third hour on delay can call in and participate with Bernie, because ever since that change, we've gotten quite a few calls from folks saying, you know, I miss Bernie. That's it. You know, I have to listen to him later in the day. So we have Congressman Bernie Sanders on. Congressman Bernie Sanders in 1991 was the first independent congressman elected in 40 years. He's since been reelected 5 times, the longest serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. In my opinion, America's congressman, Congressman Bernie Sanders. Bernie, welcome to the program.
Tom, great to be with you.
It is always so great to have you here. What's on your mind today? What's happening in Congress?
Well, it has been a heck of a week, to say the least. A couple of issues, obviously, that I think everybody is talking about. You and I have talked about our concerns about media control in America. In the last couple of weeks, we've seen two outrageous examples of big money attempting to control what the American people can see. We're aware just the other day that Michael Moore's book, Michael Moore's new movie, Fahrenheit 9/11, which was supposed to be distributed by Disney, they decided not to distribute that movie. The allegations on Moore's part and people working with him is that Disney was worried that they would lose some of their tax breaks in Florida through Jeb Bush. I have the feeling, knowing Michael, that he will end up getting this film widely distributed, that there'll be so much publicity regarding it, it'll probably do better than he would have otherwise. Yeah. But nonetheless, it does say a lot that a strong anti-Bush film done by a best-selling author, certainly one of the best-known critics in the United States, cannot get distributed by a major corporation, an issue that all of us should be concerned about. That follows on the footsteps, as you know, of Sinclair Broadcasting, deciding that they would not utilize the Nightline program and Ted Koppel's work, because it simply demonstrated and showed the face of war and literally the faces of 750 men and women who have been killed in Iraq. Two examples of the power of corporate media to deny the American people the opportunity to hear another point of view. That's issue number one. Obviously, Tom, the issue of these photographs in the jail in Iraq is also something that's reverberating around the world.
Yeah. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Bernie, are you joining the chorus of calls for Rumsfeld to resign? I know he started testifying about a half hour ago. I haven't caught it.
The answer is yeah, but that's not the real issue.
I mean,
Rumsfeld should have resigned the day after he was appointed. What we have to talk about, I just don't want to see that become the prominent issue, and that if in fact he does resign, the next guy comes in. The issue is the policy that we are pursuing. And I think it's interesting, there appears to be in the Bush administration a growing split. I mean, something that has always been there, but it's becoming a little bit more out in the open between Colin Powell and Rumsfeld and Bush, where the Powell people are saying that this is what the damage being done by those photographs. If you were Osama bin Laden and you wanted to phony up some photographs, this is probably the image of what you would do.
Oh, this is better than anything Osama could do. I mean, or worse from our point of view, but from his point of view, I mean, this. Now we've got Tony Blair's personal human rights envoy to Iraq saying that she witnessed last year a 70-year-old Iraqi woman being with a leash around her neck being ridden by a U.S. soldier and telling her that she was a donkey. And this was in the U.K. press today.
And what we hear is more may be coming out. There are allegations that prisoners have died, been killed.
Yeah. We've seen two pictures of two of them now.
What this is doing is, at a time when everybody knows that anti-Americanism is probably higher now, not only in the Muslim world, but in throughout Europe, throughout the rest of the world, this is only going to make a bad situation that much worse. And become, I mean, Osama bin Laden is having a good week, no question about that, and that's something that all of us should be concerned about. So the issue of Rumsfeld is, I don't want to let them off so easy. Sure, Rumsfeld should resign, but that doesn't mean much. The real issue is, how do we, in these very, very difficult times, change our policy? How do we reach out not only to the Muslim world, but to all of our friends and allies throughout the world and say, wait a second, the United States is going to change its policy because it's, A, the right thing to do. We want to work with people around the world. We don't want to be isolated. But second of all, even for our own limited self-interests, if you're going to fight international terrorism, we have got to be working with the entire international community. We can't do it alone. That's the real issue, and I don't want to see Rumsfeld be the guy, the fall guy for this whole thing. It goes a lot deeper than Rumsfeld. The fear, I think, that many Americans have is that our fundamental policies are not going to be changed so long as George Bush is president of the United States.
Yeah, Ronald Reagan, after the bombing in Lebanon in which over 200 of our soldiers died, went on national television and said responsibility rests. He said, I'm not going to blame the soldiers. I'm not going to blame the commanders. I'm not going to blame the military. I'm not going to blame the Pentagon. I'm paraphrasing. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but this is very close to it. Pardon me. He said the responsibility, and he used the word responsibility. He said the responsibility for this rests in this office with this president, and I am personally taking that responsibility. I don't understand why George Bush can't be the man that Ronald Reagan was. I mean, yesterday he didn't even say, I apologize. He said, I told this guy standing next to me that I apologized to him. He didn't even look at the camera and say, I apologize. I mean, it was a weasel apology. It seems to me that we've completely lost the hearts and minds, or any possibility of the hearts and minds of the Arab world. And it's time to get out of there just as quickly as we can, because there's no way now, in my opinion, that we can complete this. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree with you. I think there's going to have to, I mean, the difficulty is it's just hard to imagine Bush doing anything close to the right thing. But I think the responsibility, at least, for the progressive members of Congress is to stand up, demand a radical change in our approach, and certainly getting our troops out as quickly as possible is at the top of the list. Internationalizing the situation is right up there as well. But there have got to be voices in Congress, not just demanding Rumsfeld's resignation. That's the easy part. But to tell, and this is really important, the rest of the world has got to know that not only what's happening in Iraqi jails, but our policy does not reflect what the vast majority of the American people feel are good policy. That we have a guy who has been surrounded by these neocon ideologues. They have been wrong about every bloody thing that they have said in Iraq, and we've got to stop them before they do damage that will not be rectified in our lifetime.
Yeah, it almost seems to me that it would work to Bush's political benefit. I mean, thinking in Karl Rove's super Machiavellian terms, if there was a growing cry for Rumsfeld to be kicked out, it lasts for a few days, and then Bush says, okay, he's out. And then at that point, Bush seems to have washed his hands. We now have a villain. The villain has been punished. End of discussion. And Bush walks
away
from it.
The fear. That's exactly the point that I'm making. That deflects attention from the real issues.
That's
so
right.
If Rumsfeld resigns, it's fine. But it could be nothing more than a public relations gimmick. You have the new guy coming in. I apologize, blah, blah, blah. Everything is wonderful. Well, needless to say, everything is not wonderful. We need a fundamental change of policy. Most importantly, I think, in the deepest sense, we have got to tell our allies throughout the world, poor people throughout the world, that we want to work with the entire global community to improve the horrendous economic conditions facing billions of people, that we want to struggle against terrorism with the rest of the world. And that we're not going to do it alone. And that's what we've got to be doing.
Yeah, and we need to clean up our act with regard to these gulags that we have all over the world from Guantanamo.
You know, what's very interesting to me, Tom, I don't know if other listeners have picked up on this. If you think that what you're seeing in American-run jails in Iraq is not taking place in American-run jails in the United States...
Oh, Texas. I mean, you know, there were these, when George Bush was governor of Texas, there were all these reports coming out of Amnesty International about Texas prisons.
Right.
It's, yeah.
And
absolutely.
The kinds of rape that takes place in prisons, we have some horrendous conditions. And maybe, one of the unforeseen positive developments out of this might be that people start paying attention to conditions in American prisons as well.
Yeah, that would be nice. We have several callers here stacked up. Let's move to the phones. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, Marge in Santa Fe, a first-time caller. Hey, Marge, welcome to the program. You're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders and Tom Hartman.
Thank you very much. It's my first time. I want to raise two things quickly. Bush justifies the U.S. invading Iraq by saying he's taking freedom and democracy to the Iraqis, as if freedom and democracy can be packaged and airdropped into Iraq. But no one challenges his use of those precious words to describe the mess he's creating in Iraq. And I suggest, Tom, that you start a daily contest for the wittiest response to the question, where's the freedom, where's the democracy?
Yeah. Sort of like, where's the beef?
That's right.
Okay.
Well,
that's right.
Marge raises a good question and makes a good point. And, you know, the president uses the word freedom a whole lot. He uses religious imagery a whole lot as well. And I think people have got to challenge him on both of those issues. For example, as we have talked about on this show, freedom, it seems to me, is not what, among other things, the USA Patriot Act is about. Freedom is welcoming different points of view, is that understanding that while fighting terrorism is, in my view, very serious business, we don't do it by undermining basic constitutional rights, which is what, in many ways, the USA Patriot Act does. The truth of the matter is defending freedom is not so easy, and I do not think, whether it's in Iraq or whether in the United States, that Bush has a particularly good record. And I think Marge is exactly right.
Yeah, Marge, we have about 15 seconds left. You said you had a second point. You want to put that out, and Bernie can answer it after the break.
I wanted more time than 15 seconds, if I could. It's my first time calling.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, if you want to just stick around, I can just hold on to you over the break.
Thank you.
Okay, this is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's independent congressman. Also, our congressman from Vermont here, an extraordinary man. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. 20 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Wakefield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warming, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Pine River, Michigan, where the abandoned Velsicol plant leaks cancer-causing chemicals into the water. It's a danger neighbors will be living with for years to come. The Bush administration says polluters no longer have to pay to clean up the mess they leave behind. Taxpayers do. That means less money, fewer cleanups, and more families left at risk. Mr. President, there is a better way. Make polluters pay. Protect our kids and communities.
During the past 3 years, it's true George W. Bush has created more jobs. Unfortunately, they were created in places like China. Bush's policies have encouraged the loss of nearly 3 million jobs. He supported tax breaks to corporations that ship jobs overseas. George W. Bush is taking our country in the wrong direction. It's time to make America work for every American.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface, and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's the Brunch with Bernie segment of our Friday program. We're on with live with Congressman Bernie Sanders and Marge in Santa Fe. You had a second question for Bernie. Fire away.
Yes, thank you. I want to give both of you a heads up on a very possible Bush campaign tactic. Last January 14th, the New York Times carried a big story about Bush's $1.5 billion healthy marriage proposal. I predict that Bush will use taxpayers' money to distribute a multi-page letter-sized tract full of hate, fear, lies, steering voters to vote for Bush if you support an anti-gay marriage amendment. This tract will be dropped on millions of doorsteps throughout the country. A similar campaign tactic was used back in Colorado in 1992 to pass Amendment 2.
I would predict that he's going to be dropping these in churches, by the way.
Yeah, churches, yeah. But also doorsteps, thousands, millions of doorsteps. They used that campaign in 1992 in Colorado for that Amendment 2, and that disallowed civil rights protection for gay people.
Yeah. Great. Thanks for giving.
It was their most effective tactic.
Yes. Okay. Thanks for giving us the heads up on that, Marge. And Bernie, you know, what are your thoughts on that, and also on these Medicare ads that the Bush administration is running with our tax dollars?
Well, very briefly, I mean, as I hope most listeners know, this recently prescription drug Medicare proposal that passed the Congress at 5:30 in the morning after 3 hours of arm twisting, which has resulted in an investigation as to whether bribery literally took place on the floor of the House, and another investigation as to why the Medicare authorities, the head of Medicare, broke the law by not allowing his auditor to tell members of Congress what the bill actually cost, etc., that the bill is a disaster from beginning to end and was written by the pharmaceutical industry for the pharmaceutical industry. But in terms of the point that Marge makes, what she is talking about is how the Bush campaign will use wedge issues. And what a wedge issue is about is to take one group of people, in this case straight people, who may have concerns or anxiety over gay marriage, use that to divide people up against each other. They will do the same with the abortion issue. They'll do the same with the gun issue. They'll do the same with prayer in school. You name the issue, and they will be trying to divide one group of Americans up against the other. And all of this, you remember, Tom, from a president who said, I am a uniter.
Not a divider.
Not a divider, and yet there is a direct calculated effort to divide black from white, urban from rural, men from women, gay from straight, native-born from immigrant, and so forth and so on. That is their strategy.
Yeah.
And I think that our strategy has got to be precisely the opposite. To say, you know, I have a 100% voting record on all of these issues, but the point here is to bring America together on those issues that the vast majority of middle-class and working families agree on. And we counter that by saying, okay, you don't like gay marriage, fine. Do you think your job should be going to China, or should we be having decent-paying jobs in America? Should we be having health care for all people? Should we be giving tax breaks to billionaires or building affordable housing? And we have got to counter with a very strong, progressive, economic agenda that brings the American people together, regardless of race, regardless of gender, urban, rural, or whatever.
Yeah, keep the eye on the prize. Keep your eye on the real issues.
And if you do that, what you will do is make it clear to everybody in America that the Bush economic agenda is designed to represent the interests of the richest 2% of the population, and it is a disservice to the vast majority of the people, not to mention our kids and our grandchildren, who are going to pick up a huge national debt.
Yeah, oh, amen. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Brunch with Bernie. Kodak in North Carolina, Duncan in Dallas, Dave in Eureka. Hang on, we'll take your calls right after this break. It's a Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour.
Thank you.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about the Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
It's crunch time for SBC Communications and the Communications Workers of America. The company's 100,000-strong union-represented service and support staff may strike as early as tomorrow unless terms for a new contract can be agreed upon. The two sides are still far apart on health insurance premiums for the current workforce as well as on issues of job outsourcing. If a strike does take place, SBC is expected to draft non-union staff and management to fill service and support jobs, including 12-hour shifts 7 days a week without overtime. That may run afoul of labor law, at least in states like California, where the rules exempt managerial and professional staff from overtime pay, provided they're engaged in their normal duties. Fixing phone lines and providing directory assistance may invoke this clause. SBC could try to get around this by petitioning the federal government for relief.
Thursday afternoon, more than 250 graduate students, undergrads, and clerical staff marched through historic Columbia University Library carrying signs reading Union Now. For the past 3 weeks, some 1,900 members of the Graduate Student Employees Union representing teaching and research assistants have been on strike. Columbia administration officials are refusing to recognize their union. Stephen Twilley, a second-year graduate student in Italian, says the university works because TAs do.
We are workers too, and just because we are also students, that doesn't at all get rid of the fact that we are workers and that these are jobs, and we don't have a choice to not take these jobs unless we're getting support from somewhere else.
Allegations of slave-like labor conditions in U.S. military camps in Iraq, this from Indian workers who returned home this month after making an escape. The workers say they were promised by a private contractor that they'd be put to work in Kuwait and didn't realize they were actually in Iraq until it was too late. Outside of mortar shelling and errant gunfire, the workers claim they were held against their will by the U.S. Army. One claims he was beaten by a soldier when he asked to go home. They also say they were paid less than a quarter of what they were promised for their work. The Indian government has formally demanded an explanation from the United States. Its ambassador to India says an investigation is now open into the charges.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study by the Environmental Integrity Project and Public Citizen found the nation's top power plant polluters are also Bush supporters. Only 5% of facilities produced 43% of sulfur dioxide, 31% of carbon dioxide, and 43% of mercury pollution. Since 1999, the 30 biggest utility companies have poured $6.6 million into the Bush presidential campaign and the Republican National Committee. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
We don't need no thought control.
No, but it seems John Ashcroft is determined to give it to us anyway. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Brunch with Bernie. The Tom and Bernie Show here. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Our Friday, our traditional Friday segment, we've moved it up an hour. It's 27 minutes before the hour, and let's go to the phone. We have Kodak in Raleigh, North Carolina, is on the line. Hey, Kodak, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Yes, good evening. I'm Tom and Bernie. Just where do you start expressing the outrage in this administration and this policy? For me, I guess I can start right there with how they speak for the American people. They do not speak for me. And they were just saying how, let the world look at us and look at our shining example, look at our examples of freedom and liberation. And then I always tell those people, take a look. What do you see? A bunch of grumpy old white men. How can they collectively express all the opinions of the American people?
Yeah.
And the thing that I'm most unregrettable as those pictures are that we had to witness regarding the treatment of the Iraqi prisoners, those pictures serve as an example to all those people who holler about wanting war and defending democracy and freedom. They have to understand that we Americans have blood on our hands. And those pictures help people to really understand that war is not what the individual citizen of America is about. And that is also why we would never be able to win this war in Iraq. Those people over there are used to war, used to defending their country, and they will avenge the death of their family members. How can the United States policy think, I'm sorry, I'm ranting, how can they think that they can just bomb these people, starve them, hinder their economy through sanctions, then drop more bombs on them, and leave in Kuwait, and then come over there and drop these bombs on them, and expect these people to embrace us anything other than...
It's an excellent point, Kodak. Is there a question in there?
I think I got the point.
Well, I just had to
here's
that
the point. Kodak says that these guys really are not reflecting who the American people are. And he's absolutely right. They reflect the interest of a very small number of ideological right-wing folks who are backed up by large corporations and wealthy individuals. And the antidote to that, though, is for us to move forward as quickly as we can to revitalize American democracy. Kodak, we're not going to change that if 50% of the people vote. We're going to need 80% of the people to vote.
Well,
we need low-income people and working people to start participating in the political process so that we make government work for everybody and not just Halliburton and other large corporations.
Yeah. But even on a personal level, you know, each individual citizen, especially us who have such a deep passion for this country, we got to start with our children. We got to start with people in our community. We got to start each day as we meet and greet people on the highways. Today, just take a little more time. Be a little more courteous. Let somebody out. Don't be all in a hurry. Take the time
Out. You're absolutely
on an individual level. And, yes, we got to get involved politically. And this is a great format. And thanks for letting me say my piece.
Okay. Thanks.
Y'all have a good day. I had to get it out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you done good. Okay. You did well. Further thoughts on that, Bernie, or should we go to the next call here?
Yeah, let's go to the next call.
Okay, we have, let's see, Duncan in Dallas, Texas is on the line, listening on the Sirius Satellite Radio System. Hey, Duncan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Congressman, I was on the Thomas site this week trying to discern exactly what they're doing with the corporate tax overhaul bill, and I could...
I think we're losing Duncan. I think we've lost you, Duncan. Try calling us back. We've lost your cell there.
Duncan, what I garnered, he was talking about corporate taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you heard?
Well, yeah, he was on the Thomas site. Yeah, that's the,
Congress.
Yeah, the Congress searchable database, yeah. About the overhaul of corporate welfare, corporate taxation.
Well, I don't know if that's where he was coming from, but the overview of what's going on with taxes in general, including certainly corporate taxes, is that for the last many years, greatly accelerated by President Bush, we have been giving huge tax breaks to the wealthiest people in this country, which has driven up our deficit, driven up our national debt, put many states throughout the nation in serious problems, resulting in them raising regressive taxes, which hit the middle class. So essentially what we're seeing is a shift of the tax burden from the wealthy and large corporations to the middle class, not to mention with an adequate funding of higher education, many state universities are raising their tuition, and working families are having to pick it up from that end. The bottom line here is, in my view, that at a time when the United States of America has, and it's not even close, Tom, at some point we should get into this a whole lot, the most unequal distribution of wealth and income of any major country on earth, you don't give tax breaks to billionaires and keep the shame of having the highest rate of childhood poverty in the industrialized world even getting worse.
Yeah, you know, the most amazing thing to me, Bernie, is how right-wing talk radio every single day and all the Republican talking points and much of the media in the United States is out there saying, in essence, I mean, this is the subtext of the message, what's good for millionaires and billionaires is good for you.
It's the old trickle-down theory.
And it's a lie.
But you know what's funny, Tom? If you look at these polls and you ask people, question, would you rather pay more in taxes and provide good quality health care for all Americans, or do you want a tax break? Do you want to protect the environment, or do you want a tax break? You know what the middle class people say? They say, we live in the real world. We live in a community. We want kids to have education. We want good environment. We'll pay our fair share of taxes. What you have is these billionaires who have more money than they're going to use in a thousand lifetimes. They're worried about their taxes, and they don't care if the children of the middle class can't go to college or are forced to pay off a huge debt payment every year because of a growing national debt. What you're seeing is, and use capital letters, neon lights, greed, greed, greed among the very wealthiest people in this country who want it all.
Yeah.
And that's the issue that we've got to focus on.
Yeah, and this is the whole. This is an entire value system that started with the Reagan administration becoming very widespread across the United States.
And you know what? What's interesting to me, Tom, despite right-wing media and many of these right-wing folks in Congress and a president of the United States who shares that value system, the average American hasn't bought it.
Yep.
The average American is not prepared to turn his or her back on a kid who's sleeping out on the street, on a senior citizen who can't afford prescription drugs. Most Americans, not all, want to see this country a community in which we care about each other, where equality exists, not where some people have it all and other people have nothing.
Amen. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to be on with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Dave in Eureka, California is on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program. You're on Live with Bernie.
Good morning, Bernie. C-SPAN aired your entire talk on what's happening to the distribution of wealth under the Bush administration, and you are a refreshing voice of reality.
Thanks, Dave.
Quick points for you, if I might. I'm a retired psychologist, and in response to one of the previous callers, I think that it's a fact that most sexually secure heterosexuals could care less what's happening with the gays and the gay marriage, and what it is those panicky who need to prove how sexually straight they are that are pushing that. But the other issue, Bernie, measure from Russ Holt that the hackable, untraceable voting machines. I understand they're stonewalling it. Do you know that to be a fact? And if so, what is their logic? Do they want to win by rigging the election? Or?
Yeah.
I think Tom has had Rush on the show.
Yeah.
Rush Holt is a congressman from New Jersey, and basically his proposition, and I certainly agree with him and on board his legislation, is that if you're going to use a touch screen machine for voting, that you got to kick out a paper receipt so that the officials can make sure that the votes that were cast are the votes that were counted.
Yeah, not just a receipt, a ballot.
A ballot, right.
Yeah.
There is some, I mean, the dilemma is we're running out of time. We've got an election coming in November. My understanding is that that bill is not going to get through the House of Representatives. Okay, that's my impression. I think almost everybody on board is either, in my case, an independent or Democrats. I don't think Republicans are flocking to that. On the other hand, and Tom, you may know more about this than I do, certainly the Secretary of State in California has made some major steps forward in taking on Diebold, the major manufacturer of these machines, and I think is not going to allow them to use those machines in many parts of California. Is that correct?
That's right. He specifically decertified Diebold, and he said he would like to take out all of the machines in the state, but he was able to actually point to lies, distortions, malfeasance,
right,
breaking the law on the part of that particular corporation, as I understood it. I mean,
to answer Dave's question, I think there is a growing awareness among state officials, as well as many Americans and people in Congress, that the technology is not yet there to guarantee that the votes cast are going to be the votes counted. Maybe 5 years from now, it will be the case.
Yeah.
But it just is not the case now. We've got to be very, very mindful of and observant about what's happening.
Yeah, and now, Bernie, today in the Associated Press reports that the state of Florida is going to again run a purge on their voters. Let's get back to that in just a second. Duncan is back on the line here. He's got the fellow we dropped on the cell phone here in Dallas to clarify his question. Duncan, are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, you were saying.
Congressman, what the bill going through Congress about the tax overhaul for corporations is about. I couldn't make heads or tails out on the Thomas side.
Well, there are a lot of bills. There is not one bill. There are, probably many bills dealing with taxation.
It's SR 1637 and I think HR 4428, I think.
Okay, well, I'll check it out, but I don't have that information in front of me, Duncan. But I can tell you, if it's coming from the Republican leadership, what I can fairly well guarantee, the primary beneficiaries of that will be large corporations and not the average American.
Yeah, I smelled it right. I just couldn't find it.
Yeah. Well, there are ways. Just, within Thomas, if you put down the bill number, you should be able to get the bill.
Yeah, but that's gobbledygook there. For me.
Right, so just, there's a page there where if you put the bill number down, they will lead you to the bill and who's co-sponsoring and what it's about.
Yeah.
So check it out. You should be able to do that.
Okay, thanks for the call, Duncan. Duncan, good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, and the lines are open. Bernie, Florida, I'm sure you're familiar with this thing that Michael Moore wrote about in his book Stupid White Men.
Sure.
It was first documented by Greg Palast for BBC.
That's right.
And that BBC documentary was seen all across Europe, all around the world, Australia, England. It was never shown in the United States about how 90,000 largely African Americans got ripped off the voter rolls in Florida.
Palast's point, which I think was a very good point, and I did read his book.
Yeah.
It's called Democracy.
The Best Democracy.
Best Democracy the Money Can Buy, I think was the title of it, right?
Yeah.
His point was that while we focused on the hanging chads and all of that after the election, the most important decisions were made well before Election Day, and that what the Jeb Bush administration and Catherine Harris did was go through in the most outrageous way, go through the voting rolls and essentially deny many, many thousands of people, low-income people, mostly African-American, and throw them off of the voting rolls. So when they showed up to vote on Election Day, they could not do that. And I would strongly suspect that this time, if they attempt to do something like that, there's going to be massive outrage and opposition from the Kerry campaign and everybody else in Florida. I don't think that they're going to be successful in getting away with that again. What you do is, I was a mayor of a city, Burlington, Vermont, and what you do is you go through your voting lists every number of years because people die, people move out of state, etc., etc. There's a process. What they did in Florida was completely off the wall because, A, they contracted out to a private company to do it.
In Texas.
Pardon me?
In Texas, a Texas company.
Right. And then they gave them great latitude. So they said, look, if you determine that George A. Smith is ineligible, but you only come up with a George B. Smith, different human being, well, you can deal with George B. as well.
Yeah.
And the end result was that many people who, in fact, even under Florida law, should have been able to vote, were not able to. The other question in there is felons and so forth, which is another issue of huge consequence. You got a whole lot of folks in this country who are now ineligible to vote because they have been in jail. Some states pardon them, allow them to vote. Some states do not. But that's another issue because in certain southern states, a whole lot of people, young African-American males, for example, just cannot vote anymore.
Yeah. Here's the lead sentence from us. This just came down the wire service, Associated Press. Florida has ordered a statewide purge of freed felons from its voter rolls, an election year directive that some say would disenfranchise up to 40,000 people. That just came down.
Let me make the prediction that that decision is going to be met with a much fiercer response.
Yeah.
Than was the case 4 years ago.
We had, this is something that I found really fascinating. We had Greg Palast on the show last week, and he just completed a study, I'm not sure if he did it. Somebody just completed a study that he was reporting on. in which they found that there were roughly 1.9 million Americans all across the United States whose votes did not get counted in the 2000 election that were cast on electronic voting machines. And what
1.9 million on electronic voting machines?
Yes.
That did not get counted?
That's right. They were called spoiled ballots. Now, these were not all electronic voting machines. Many of them were the optical scan things, but the Diebold scanners like we have here in Vermont or actually I think we have ES&S scanners here.
Well, each town has
whichever, yeah, whatever it is here in Montpelier. But anyhow, either the scanners or the electronic voting machines. But what was interesting is that while the African-American population in the United States is, what, 11-12% of the population, something like that, and the African-American voting participation is around 7-9%, 50%, more than 50% of the spoiled votes, the votes that didn't get counted, were in African-American districts with these machines. And he said that they had to do with machines not booting, incorrect passwords, machines not being plugged in. And he was of the opinion that this was vote fraud, low-tech vote fraud. It's just amazing. Anyway, we got to take a break here, Bernie. We'll pick this up on the other side of it. Talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's a Tom Hartman program, 10 minutes before the hour. We'll be right back.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the founding fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Big institutions have a lot of consumer power, and they can put it to good use. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. More individuals and families are choosing to buy organic food, hybrid cars, and recycled paper over less environmentally sound alternatives. Getting governments and universities to buy green products is more difficult. Lisa Masney of the World Watch Institute recently looked at institutional purchasing power. She says individual actions are important, but big institutions have an enormous impact.
For example, universities or government agencies, the United Nations, the World Bank, you know, all these very, very large institutions that make buying decisions every day. They use paper, they have food in their cafeterias, they have fleet vehicles. They're making these kinds of decisions on a much larger level.
Masney says if large institutions push for green products, it can change a whole industry. One example was a 1993 federal initiative that required government agencies to purchase computers that met high energy standards.
And as a result of this directive, it set into motion sort of a massive overhaul of the consumer market, and manufacturers had to respond to this. And largely as a result of the increased demand on the government side, today about 95% of all monitors, 80% of all computers, and 99% of all printers sold in North America now meet ENERGY STAR standards.
Masney says individuals should choose environmentally friendly products, but pushing for changes in institutional purchasing will really force changes in the market. For more information about this story or others you hear on Earthwatch Radio, visit our website at ewradio.org. That's ewradio.org. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to Calm Before the Storm of the election of November 2004. Here we are. Anyhow, it's Tom Hartman with Congressman Bernie Sanders. We have one of our serious listeners, Jerry in Louisiana, on the line. Hey, Jerry, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Tom?
Great.
I'd like to ask you and Bernie, when Catherine Harris took all the Democrats off the voting rolls before the 2000 election, how come the courts down there let her get away with that?
Welcome to the world of politics. Judges are political, and as you know, the Supreme Court of the state of Florida did a damn good job in trying to make sure that all the votes in Florida were counted. But they were overruled by the United States Supreme Court, which by a 5-4 vote decided that they would stop the counting and appoint George Bush president.
Yeah, and then Clarence Thomas, who was appointed by George Bush's father, cast the deciding vote.
Couldn't that Florida Supreme Court done something about that before the election?
No, they tried. In fairness to the Florida Supreme Court, against tremendous opposition, they tried to do the right thing. But they were overruled by the United States Supreme Court, which is the highest court in the land, all of which takes us to the basic issue of politics, the need for people to get involved, the need for people to elect good people from the local, from local positions to all the way up to the President of the United States. And when we do that, we will have a better court system. We'll have justice in this country. We'll have a fairer distribution of wealth. We'll have people with a national health care program guaranteeing health care to all people.
And if the rest of the world can do it, we can do it, right?
We can do it.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, it's not good enough to be outraged. Everybody is outraged. The goal is to take that outrage, to use our brains to figure out why people are voting against their own economic interests, to raise the number of people who are participating in the political process. The truth of the matter is, most people in this country are decent people. They don't want to see the United States isolated from other countries around the world. They want all of our folks to have health care. They don't want to see the richest 1% own more wealth than the bottom 90% and us have the highest rate of childhood poverty of any other major country. So the question is reaching out, bringing people together, getting them to participate in the political process. We do that. We change America.
Oh, man. Your website, Bernie, for folks who want more
information. Bernie.house.gov.
Bernie.house.gov. Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's independent congressman. Bernie, thanks again for being with us this week.
Okay, thank you, Tom.
We'll see you next week. Okay, bye now. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly, and they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
It's crunch time for SBC Communications and the Communications Workers of America. The company's 100,000-strong union-represented service and support staff may strike as early as tomorrow unless terms for a new contract can be agreed upon. The two sides are still far apart on health insurance premiums for the current workforce as well as on issues of job outsourcing. If a strike does take place, SBC is expected to draft non-union staff and management to fill service and support jobs, including 12-hour shifts 7 days a week without overtime. That may run afoul of labor law, at least in states like California, where the rules exempt managerial and professional staff from overtime pay, provided they're engaged in their normal duties. Fixing phone lines and providing directory assistance may invoke this clause. SBC could try to get around this by petitioning the federal government for relief.
Thursday afternoon, more than 250 graduate students, undergrads, and clerical staff marched through historic Columbia University Library carrying signs reading Union Now. For the past 3 weeks, some 1,900 members of the Graduate Student Employees Union representing teaching and research assistants have been on strike. Columbia administration officials are refusing to recognize their union. Stephen Twilley, a second-year graduate student in Italian, says the university works because TAs do.
We are workers too, and just because we are also students, that doesn't at all get rid of the fact that we are workers and that these are jobs, and we don't have a choice to not take these jobs unless we're getting support from somewhere else.
Allegations of slave-like labor conditions in U.S. military camps in Iraq, this from Indian workers who returned home this month after making an escape. The workers say they were promised by a private contractor that they'd be put to work in Kuwait and didn't realize they were actually in Iraq until it was too late. Outside of mortar shelling and errant gunfire, the workers claim they were held against their will by the U.S. Army. One claims he was beaten by a soldier when he asked to go home. They also say they were paid less than a quarter of what they were promised for their work. The Indian government has formally demanded an explanation from the United States. Its ambassador to India says an investigation is now open into the charges.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study by the Environmental Integrity Project and Public Citizen found the nation's top power plant polluters are also Bush supporters. Only 5% of facilities produced 43% of sulfur dioxide, 31% of carbon dioxide, and 43% of mercury pollution. Since 1999, the 30 biggest utility companies have poured $6.6 million into the Bush presidential campaign and the Republican National Committee. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Writers used to sacrifice for their art, subsisting on stale biscuits and cheap wine, letting their health go as they wrote day and night. No such suffering for Carol Matthews, though. She's a British writer of what is called edgy romantic comedy novels aimed at young contemporary women. And rather than sacrifice, she has simply sold her artistic self to Ford Motor Company. In the latest intrusion of corporate advertising into every nook and cranny of everyone's existence, Ford has paid a pile of money to Miss Matthews in exchange for her pledge literally to write the company's products into her romantic novels. It seems that Ford is eager to pitch its Fiesta car to 28 to 35-year-old women on their way up the career ladder. Apparently, this is the very demographic that Matthews' books reach. Chick lit, it's known in the biz. So Ford has become a literary character. For example, in a special short story written for the company, she drops in a reference to, quote, whizzing around Buckinghamshire in Imogene, a rather snazzy Ford Fiesta complete with 6-CD changer, air conditioning, and thoroughly comfy seats. Art meets ad copy, and ad copy wins by a knockout. Matthews, who also is appearing in ads for Ford, says she's not troubled by this corporatization of her work. Quote, I've been very pleased with Ford in that they haven't put any constraints on my writing at all, she gushed. Well, good gollies, Ms. Matthews, I'm sure they won't, as long as you keep writing breathless copy like that. But what if you tried to, you know, test your corporate freedom by writing something like, whizzing around Buckinghamshire, my snazzy Ford Fiesta sputtered and died on me again, just as the 6-CD changer went on the fritz and spewed blue smoke in my face. This is Jim Hightower saying, who would buy a particular car just because some writer mentions it in a novel? And Ford wonders why it's falling behind Japanese car makers?
Toyota owners, tired of paying high gas prices? Well, how about paying nothing? That's right. Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Plus, 1,000 more will win $50 fill-ups. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer to enter the sweepstakes. You'll get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota-trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and ask about our main tire and service offers.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void or prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 or older with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at Toyota.com/owners.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, and streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Go to tomhartman.com. You can drop into our chat room, which is full of folks. Another fascinating discussion. It's amazing what I learn from the people in our chat room. Every now and then I'll share some little factoid with you. Hey, I just got the my little secret. Very often it's the folks in the chat room who are letting me know. You know, between their discussions about sex and things. No. They really don't do that. They don't do that much. Anyhow, 8 minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to be on the program. I want to talk about the price of oil in this hour and what this has to do with Iraq and what's going on and what is happening in Iraq. Just this whole situation, Rummy and all of this. So I have a perspective to share with you that I am betting that you haven't thought about, you haven't considered, I don't think most people in America have, that suddenly
puts a lot of things into perspective, causes a lot of things to fall into place. But first, let's take a call here. We've got Russell in Warren, Vermont is on the line. Hey, Russell, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom.
What's up?
Were you aware of the investigation of these abuses back in January?
I was not, no. What I was aware of was last summer, the Amnesty International was complaining about conditions in Guantanamo, and there has been no shortage of civil rights groups who are suggesting that there was torture going on in Afghanistan, and certainly I reported on that in this program. In terms of the initial reports that were being passed up the chain of command in the United States Army in November, December, January, February, and March, frankly, I don't recall anything specific about that, you know, other than the occasional.
Well, I just heard Donald Rumsfeld saying on television that CNN reported to the whole world, that the whole world knew of these abuses.
When?
In January.
Oh, well, how come he didn't know?
Well, he has a timeline on CNN right now that shows back from January 4th.
Well, how come George Bush didn't know? Why did George Bush yesterday say on TV, well, I wish I'd known about this earlier?
Well, why do you think I jumped out of my chair and ran to the phone?
I see. This is, I'm speechless. It's absolutely outrageous.
It is unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, and we as Americans get exactly what we deserve.
I disagree. I'd say we as Americans deserve a whole lot better, and we are waking up to the fact that we deserve a lot better, and we are going to get a lot better. I'm not willing to blame the average American for this. George Bush lied to us. Back in the 2000 election, he said he was a compassionate conservative. He wasn't a right-wing crank. He was opposed to foreign adventurism. He was not in favor of nation building. He was going to restrain the military from further growth. I mean, he lied to us. I'm not willing to blame American people for believing a politician's lies. I'm sorry. I think a lot of well-intentioned people thought that they could trust him and that they could believe in him, and he lied to us. It's just that simple, and has continued to right up to this day.
Well, but you said yesterday that you think he's a well-intentioned man with good thoughts. And
I don't recall saying that. I believe I said yesterday I believe that he is sincere when he says that he's religious, and that's one of the things. I mean, you know, he's a born again Christian, and frankly, that's one of the things that scares me about him is that he's allowing his religion to dictate many of his policy decisions, particularly his foreign policy decisions, because his religion believes that there has to be a war in the Middle East in order for some good outcome, that is, for the return of Jesus. And that's a scary thing for me if the President of the United States is making policy decisions based on that.
Well, have you ever gone into church, sat down in a pew, and seen a puppet next to you?
No.
Not said.
No, yeah, okay. All right, thanks for the call, Russell. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to be on. And, I thought that other line was there on hold. Anyhow, here's the thing about oil. Let me just... I share this with you. People say, we went to war in Iraq for oil. I agree. But not for the reason that you think. Most people are saying, or many people are saying, we went to war in Iraq to get access to Iraqi oil and to control access to the oil in the Middle East. The reality is that we could buy oil on the open market. Pretty much all we want. I mean, you know, the price will go up, but we could buy it. What I am suggesting is that we went to war in Iraq to get access to and thus control the supply of oil in Iraq, not so that we could bring the price down, but so that we could bring the price up. And all you need to do to figure this out is you go back and you look at the history of it. The United States, right after George Bush's first round of tax cuts in the spring of 2001, and all is talking about this, in March of 2001, the recession officially started. And I've got a whole another thing on how the cons have been trying to backdate the recession to Clinton and blame Clinton for it. But it officially started in March of 2001, and there's an absolute consensus among economists on that. And the nature of this recession was deflationary, not unlike the 1929 Great Depression, deflationary. The amount of currency, the amount of money flowing around was dropping. Prices were dropping. And this is the most dangerous kind of recession. And you go back and you look at it and you see that, for example, the month after 9/11, right, December of 2001, saw oil prices hit a 28-month low, $19.15 a barrel. This was threatening the American economy. Oil was too cheap. The New York Times, for example, wrote a column that reported that Russia's refusal or inability to restrain production was the problem. They said Russia's refusal, this from the New York Times column, Russia's refusal to so far to promise more than token reductions and OPEC's announcement that it would not cut back production on its own sent benchmark oil prices tumbling 20% last week. This would add to the recession. This in a deflationary environment. This is why Greenspan started cranking down interest rates as fast as he could. We have the most dramatic and substantial drop in interest rates in the history of the United States, all the way down to levels that we haven't seen since the 40s and 50s. 1%, you know, the federal funds rate, the overnight rate the banks loan to each other. 1%, you just can't go lower, practically speaking. And so what did we do? Well, all of a sudden, coming to the rescue was this near coup in Venezuela and strikes in the Venezuelan oil fields. We import about 15-20% of our oil from Venezuela. And all of a sudden, Venezuelan oil production dropped, and that drove the price of oil back up. But that would not last if France, Russia, China, and South Korea had their way. You say, now what's this got to do with them? Well, they had all just signed contracts with Saddam Hussein to buy his oil and put it on the open market at any price they wanted. And it threatened to continue to drive down the price of oil. And in fact, Financial Times reported September 12, 2000, Russia is stepping up the pressure for a lifting of UN sanctions on Iraq, arguing that it has lost more than $30 billion in business since the embargo was imposed 10 years ago. Jacques Chirac, France's president, last week made clear his disapproval of the ongoing sanctions. Tariq Aziz was coming out saying, hey, you know, drop the sanctions. We'd like to start selling oil to these people. Once the inspectors started their work, it may have just been a matter of months last year before French, Russian, Chinese, and Korean oil would be flowing from Mosul and Basra into world markets because they already had signed these contracts. On March 17, 2003, Saddam Hussein explicitly invited Hans Blix into Iraq for another round of inspections, specifically so the sanctions could be lifted once Blix certified he no longer had WMDs, so he could sell oil to China, South Korea, Russia, and France. And this was a major threat to the oil industries of the United States and the multinational oil corporations that are mostly based in the United States. It was a deflationary threat to them. And so I'm suggesting that the reason that we went into Iraq was not to hold down the price of oil, but was to be able to hold up the price of oil. It's almost $40 a barrel right now. I'm suggesting this is where we want it. Now, Bush may be able to drive it down just before the election, but right after the election, it'll go back up again. Because we were concerned that we were going into a deflationary spiral, a dangerous economic condition, and we had to get back into at least stasis or even a slightly inflationary spiral. And the reason we needed inflation in the United States is because Bush is running up so much debt right now, borrowing money from our children and grandchildren and handing it to the richest of his buddies with these so-called tax cuts, which are actually tax shifts, that he had to have some inflation so that when it comes time to pay off those debts, they get paid off with dollars that are worth less. And oil was the primary thing that was driving this danger of deflation. So I just, you know, I wanted to lay that out there. This, you know, people say, you know, we went to war for oil. Yes, we went to oil to control the price of oil as much as the supply of oil and having access to it, in my opinion. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to call in. Friday afternoon, anything you want to talk about, 18 minutes past the hour. Roy in Rio Rancho is on the line. Hey, Roy, what's up?
Good afternoon, Tom. The comment about Rumsfeld making that they've known about it since January, it was out in the public since January.
Right.
Is echoing what I heard on C-SPAN this morning, and it jogged my memory, and I could be very imprecise on this, but there was a little blurb in the Army Times that reported three or four people had been in courts-martial, or what in the Navy we would have called captain's mast. I forget what they call it in the Army, a non-judicial disciplinary action. And there was a paragraph or two in the Army Times, and of course, the crack investigative reporters of this liberal media never followed up on it. And I remember reading a little clip of it, and the only way I would have been referred from BuzzFlash or somewhere, but it was just, it was a little thing. But like you were saying, Amnesty International and the Red Cross, this has been out there.
They've been saying this for over a year.
Last summer.
It's been longer than that. They've been saying this about Guantanamo and about the conditions in Afghanistan since we first invaded Afghanistan.
And from the get-go. And again, I don't remember the details, but there was one of the foreign correspondent photographers that was killed very close to one of those prisons, and there was quite a little hubbub at the time that he was getting too close to the prisons.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I don't remember detail. You know, I haven't had time to look it up, but you just spurred the call.
Yeah.
But it's kind of been out there if this liberal media would have done some investigating.
That liberal media, they're just not doing their jobs. Roy, thanks
have
for the call.
Have a great weekend. And,
thanks.
Have a good time in St. Louis. I spent a week there one night.
Okay. Yeah, I'll be there next weekend. Yeah, thanks, Roy. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 20 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
That grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
When I think about getting older, it's not dying I worry about, it's living and being buried under a pile of medical bills I can't pay for.
Healthcare costs are soaring. Millions more Americans are uninsured, and those who have coverage are paying more out of pocket. Yet President Bush offers no plan to curb costs, and his new Medicare law would actually ban the government from negotiating lower prices from drug companies.
The cost of these drugs, it's very scary.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he a guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman with you, 25 minutes past the hour. Whoa. Let's stop that there. We got the music attack. Welcome back. I got a Michael Moore alert here for you. I'm going to get to it after we take a couple of calls. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number if you'd like to be on the program. Dean in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Dean, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Regarding your comments about oil, some researchers have suggested that the first Gulf War also had a similar rationale, and that was to actually drive up the price of oil.
Right.
And that it was even suggested by one, the Hermann Schlolnick from Chicago, that Bush and Saddam Hussein, the elder Bush, actually were shaking down various sheikdoms in the Gulf at $5 a barrel. Or oil, so that they were actually business partners on that aspect for a long time until, of course, that war.
You mean skimming off the top?
Skimming off the top.
Yeah.
And, if you connect various oil enterprises, since Kennedy, every administration has had a pretty dominant oil-based person or two, and probably nothing as blatant as this administration.
Oh, it goes back before Kennedy. It goes back to Truman. It goes back to the end of World War II. And our staking out our position in the Middle East. I mean, yeah, that was what Rommel was all about. And during World War II, the German general who was down there, you know, trying to take Africa, trying to take North Africa, it was all about oil. As people, that's a whole other rant. But anyhow, yeah, we have a long history of propping these folks up and participating. And George Bush, I mean, right up until Saddam Hussein went to April Gillespie and said, will the United States be upset if I invade my 39th state, you know, Kuwait? And she said, no, it's not our business to involve ourselves in your internal relations or affairs. And he invaded Kuwait. It wasn't, until that point, George Bush Sr. was good buddies with Saddam. Rumsfeld was going over there shaking his hands and selling him chemicals to make weapons of mass destruction, to make chemical warfare agents for the war against Iran. We were supplying Iraq. We were supplying Saddam with satellite photos of Iranian troop movements so that he could gas them.
Well, that's right. And one other thing was even the oil rigs that Bush has out there in the Gulf, the Zapata oil that the elder Bush had, were staging areas, I guess, for running drugs to the states and also Bay of Pigs even. So,
well, yeah, Zapata Oil, which was the company that was owned by George Herbert Walker Bush back when he was an oil man before he became a congressman, and was actually a CIA front operation, and it was the oil rigs in the Gulf were mostly listening stations, monitoring Castro. This went back to Nixon. When Nixon was vice president and he was running against Kennedy, Nixon had planned this invasion of Cuba. which ended up, you know, Kennedy inherited because Nixon couldn't pull it off in time for the election. It was supposed to happen in October, but the weather was really bad and they couldn't make it happen. And that invasion of Cuba, which we call the Bay of Pigs invasion, was actually codenamed Operation Zapata, which is the same name as George Bush's oil company. And the two ships that carried the soldiers down there to the Bay of Pigs were the Barbara J and the Houston. And, you know, yeah, George Bush was in this up to his eyeball, the elder, you know, right from the get-go.
Yeah. One other comment.
Sure.
Speaking about since Kennedy and Bush and even Nixon have all come in, on the day John Kennedy was killed, Nixon was at a, I guess it was Coca-Cola convention in Dallas that very day. And after the assassination, there's that telegram that Hoover sent to A. George Bush in the CIA. Of course, they said there must be another Bush, but
yeah.
I think it's kind of interesting.
Well, they also got a phone call 3 days before the assassination from a George Bush down in Texas, you know, notifying them of strange activities in the area. I think it had to do with an employee of his who was involved. That's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
We've got a book coming out about that next year. So.
Okay.
Anyhow, it's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Thanks. Thanks, Dean. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour. The True People's Radio. You're tuned in right here. Stick around.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
It's crunch time for SBC Communications and the Communications Workers of America. The company's 100,000-strong union-represented service and support staff may strike as early as tomorrow unless terms for a new contract can be agreed upon. The two sides are still far apart on health insurance premiums for the current workforce as well as on issues of job outsourcing. If a strike does take place, SBC is expected to draft non-union staff and management to fill service and support jobs, including 12-hour shifts 7 days a week without overtime. That may run afoul of labor law, at least in states like California, where the rules exempt managerial and professional staff from overtime pay, provided they're engaged in their normal duties. Fixing phone lines and providing directory assistance may invoke this clause. SBC could try to get around this by petitioning the federal government for relief.
Thursday afternoon, more than 250 graduate students, undergrads, and clerical staff marched through historic Columbia University Library carrying signs reading Union Now. For the past 3 weeks, some 1,900 members of the Graduate Student Employees Union representing teaching and research assistants have been on strike. Columbia administration officials are refusing to recognize their union. Stephen Twilley, a second-year graduate student in Italian, says the university works because TAs do.
We are workers too, and just because we are also students, that doesn't at all get rid of the fact that we are workers and that these are jobs, and we don't have a choice to not take these jobs unless we're getting support from somewhere else.
Allegations of slave-like labor conditions in U.S. military camps in Iraq, this from Indian workers who returned home this month after making an escape. The workers say they were promised by a private contractor that they'd be put to work in Kuwait and didn't realize they were actually in Iraq until it was too late. Outside of mortar shelling and errant gunfire, the workers claim they were held against their will by the U.S. Army. One claims he was beaten by a soldier when he asked to go home. They also say they were paid less than a quarter of what they were promised for their work. The Indian government has formally demanded an explanation from the United States. Its ambassador to India says an investigation is now open into the charges.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study by the Environmental Integrity Project and Public Citizen found the nation's top power plant polluters are also Bush supporters. Only 5% of facilities produced 43% of sulfur dioxide, 31% of carbon dioxide, and 43% of mercury pollution. Since 1999, the 30 biggest utility companies have poured $6.6 million into the Bush presidential campaign and the Republican National Committee. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Photographer smile, take a break for a while, take a risk, do your very best, take 500. 500.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 27 minutes before the hour. I got, as I said, I have this Michael Moore alert for you. This is an interesting situation. We'll get to it in just a moment. We've, a few people here have been patiently waiting on the line. I want to bring them in. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Ann in Sarasota, Florida is on the line. Hey, Ann, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Had to call today because I am so disgusted with the Bush administration and what's going on. Every time I think they can't go any lower, they manage to amaze me again.
And I'm sure they will continue to up until November.
Well, this abuse that is now out in the open, I've been reading British newspapers, specifically The Guardian and a couple others, for a couple years now because I can get more and better news of what's going on there than our media here in the U.S. And I've been reading of there were rumors and things about this have been in their newspapers for months and months, and some blatant stuff about it in the last, right before this all broke, that Bremer knew back in November. It's been known, and that Fallujah, the one of the reasons that some of the reasons why they got those four mercenaries and killed them in the manner that they did is because of all the rumors that were floating around about the abuses to the Iraqi prisoners.
Yeah, and it goes back even beyond that, because we don't know what the date is on these pictures, and there are some who are speculating that these pictures and this really serious abuse happened last summer and fall when we were torturing prisoners to try and find out where Saddam Hussein was, so that George Bush could, you know, pull him out of the hat in December and you know, be the big star.
I have a real problem with our government, though, saying that they knew nothing about this, that these soldiers did this independently, because when they went into Iraq, they told the UN and stuff that they were not going to be honoring the Geneva Conventions regarding prisoners. You don't do that unless you're planning to abuse prisoners. I mean, you know, you either
wait a minute.
Say that's the way we're going to do it, or we're not. And if you say you're not, it's because you got plans otherwise.
Ann,
correct?
I didn't know that. Are you saying that the Bush administration told the UN that they were going to ignore the Geneva Convention? I don't think so.
I was reading it. Yeah, I was reading it online, not in so many words, but basically they were saying, and this is about Guantanamo. Also, they said you weren't following the Geneva Conventions, and they said, no, we're excusing ourselves from this. We will not allow any of our troops when we go into Iraq to be prosecuted under Geneva Convention rules for prisoners.
Yeah, well, actually, with regard to Guantanamo, what they're saying is that this falls outside of the Geneva Convention rules.
Well,
and
there's
because these guys are not prisoners of war.
On what really happened? Go take a look.
Yeah.
They have articles there from back when they first were going into Iraq and stuff, saying that they were saying up front that they were not going to punish any of our.
I think you may be thinking about
that may happen in the future.
You may be thinking about when we walked away from the International Court in The Hague and said we're not going to participate in that. When George Bush refused to sign the treaty against torture. Is that what you're thinking of?
I
mean, there were several specific incidents.
When they went into Iraq, they said, you know, we're not going
to
do it.
I'll have to go back and look
for it. You don't walk away from something like that unless you have plans otherwise. And for Bush to say, he said on the air that he was unaware of the pictures till he saw them on TV, but he didn't actually say he was unaware of the abuses going on. You got to look at what he said and what he didn't say.
But see, the reason why it is insane
for any administration of anybody who is heading up the United States government to say we are not going to abide by the Geneva Conventions is because we have soldiers in 152 countries around the world, and any one of them, and not to mention civilians all over the place, any one of them could be captured some of them are hostile countries, we're on the borders of hostile countries, we're near hostile countries. You get a fly, this spy plane that China shot down, whatever. We want our soldiers to be treated according to the Geneva Convention, and we would have no moral authority to demand that if we said that we were ignoring the Geneva Convention, and that's why it's just crazy for any administration to say that.
Right. Did you hear what Rush Limbaugh said on the air the other people?
I read it. I'm sorry, I don't listen to his program. He's on the air the same time I am.
I didn't hear it either, but I read the transcripts from it. Where he was saying that this was really more like young soldiers over there doing college kind of pranks.
I played that on the air here yesterday.
Torture them. That is obscene.
Yeah,
I think everybody should contact the sponsors of his show and tell them that you're outraged.
Well, yeah, or just walk away from it. Just walk away from it.
No, the
odd thing is,
know we're upset.
But see,
money counts.
Well, it does, Ann, but here's the thing. You call a sponsor of a radio show. Here's the kind of dirty little secret, the inside scoop on how it works in this industry. If you call a sponsor of a radio show and say, I was listening to this program and I'm really upset, the sponsor says to themselves, oh, she was listening to the program.
But if you say, I'm really upset, and you know what, I'm going to boycott your product if you're going to back this kind of person.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It might make a difference.
No, it generally, very rarely, there have been a few cases where that has been affected, but generally what happens is if you call a station because you're upset about something, or if you call an advertiser because you're upset about it, what that says to them is that you're listening. And that's all that they want. They just want you to listen. And so, it's the best way to disempower right-wing cranks is just not to listen to their programs. It's very, very straightforward, just to turn it off. And to listen to alternative programming, listen to this program, listen to Air America, listen to, whatever out there, and let their sponsors know that you are listening. And,
okay.
That's how this industry works. Oddly enough, people think, I actually had some folks who said, we want to get your station, your program on the air, and we're gonna hold a protest against Rush Limbaugh being on the air in this station in this little town in Colorado. And I said, if you do that, the station's gonna go, oh, they're listening to Rush Limbaugh. It's more publicity for him. See, you have to understand how the industry works for what it's worth. But Ann, good points. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. 20 minutes before the hour. Brian in New Jersey's on the line. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Howdy, Tom. Something that I wanted to bring up. A couple years ago when I became active, after reading The Last Hours, the first thing, or I should say the first time that I was active, doing some activism, I went out to The Gap, and I boycotted The Gap for sweatshop labor.
Mm-hmm.
And you always say on your program to support your sponsors, and I'm not sure if it was on IE America or Radio Power, but nosweatshop.com. Was out there, and I was somewhat skeptical. I didn't know how much, the prices were and this and that, and I went and I checked it out, and I ordered some shirts off of there, and they came real quick, and the fabric is awesome, and never again will I shop at, I never really shopped at Walmart, but just for all your listeners out there, don't shop at Walmart. Go to nosweatshop.com. It's fantastic, and
yeah.
I'm pretty sure that they're still a sponsor of yours.
Well,
and,
no, they did a trade-out with IE America Radio, and we were on that network, and I should contact them. That might be a good sponsor. You're right.
You should, because they're incredible, Tom. It's never again will I buy clothes from anywhere else, because it's top-quality material. It's all American made, and the product is just.
And the price is like 50 cents more for a shirt or something.
I bought t-shirts, pocketed, just gray t-shirts. I think it was like $7 a t-shirt.
Yeah, I mean it's remarkable. What they discovered was to manufacture things at a living wage, not just a minimum wage, but at a living wage in the United States with unionized employees. This was in California. It added only 25 to 50 cents. Per shirt to the cost of manufacturing a T-shirt compared to making that same shirt in Malaysia, and that customers were perfectly willing to pay an extra 50 cents. And
support your American economy.
Yeah, yeah, to support the American economy. Well, not even for that. I mean, just for a good quality product.
That too.
Just very straightforward. Brian, thanks for the call, and thanks
for
pointing that out. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Okay, here's the thing. In fact, this is our conservative alert for the day. This is from conservativealerts.com. They sent me an email this morning, say, my attention, Michael Moore hates, this is in all caps, it really is, hates people like you and me. He has a new, quote, documentary that proves it again, titled Fahrenheit 9/11. It's nothing more than a political assassination piece aimed at attacking and discrediting President George W. Bush. The film is reportedly full of forced attempts to depict an illicit relationship between the Bush and Bin Laden families, as well as insisting that the president, quote, welcomed, end quote, the horrific events of 9/11 to enable a power grab. Extremely anti-American in his views, Michael Moore is a proven opponent of the war on terrorism. He already has unjustly attacked and unfairly condemned the Bush administration and its efforts to protect our country. He is dedicated to bringing down the Bush presidency. His previous films, such as Bowling for Columbine, reveal just how seething Moore's hatred is for the basic patriotic American values that you and I hold dear. Like the right to take an assault weapon into a school and kill as many school kids as you want. Anyhow, Disney is doing something right for a change, says conservativealerts.com. They need to be encouraged in this action, and you need to thank them now. Take action. This is in all caps. Take action. Patriotic Americans across the country need to contact Disney today. It's in all caps. To thank them for doing the right thing and to encourage them to stay the course. Say no to Michael Moore. All of the phone calls and emails to Disney and Eisner's office apparently have paid off. But we must stay the course. Be sure to forward this email to everyone you know. And, of course, send us some money. This is our conservative alert for the day. Now, that having been said, I don't think that any of us like being bamboozled. And this is a story in The Independent, went up this morning, last night in America, this morning here in the United States. And if this is true, and it appears it is, because it's based on what Michael Moore said on CNN, we've been bamboozled by this guy, and I just want to go on the record as saying, if that's the case, I don't appreciate it. Here's the story. This is an article by Andrew Gumbel in Los Angeles. Less than 24 hours after accusing the Walt Disney Company of pulling the plug on his latest documentary in a blatant attempt at political censorship, the rabble-rousing filmmaker Michael Moore had admitted he knew a year ago that Disney had no intention of distributing it. He's in a CNN interview. He said, quote, almost a year ago, after we'd started making the film, the chairman of Disney, Michael Eisner, told my agent he was upset about Miramax had made the film and he will not distribute it. And he goes on to point out, Andrew Gumbel goes on to point out, Moore's publicity stunt, if that's what it is, appears to be working. He talks about the New York Times, did a front page piece about it. Then they wrote an op-ed piece about it. Moore told CNN that Disney had signed a contract to distribute this film but got cold feet, but Disney executives insist there was never any contract. And a source close to Miramax says that the only deal there was for financing, not for distribution. So if we have been taken in by a PR stunt on the part of Michael Moore, and it may be that he's, if this is the case, it may be that he's coming clean about it now, because you've got Senator Frank Lautenberg coming out and calling for congressional investigations into Disney. I mean, it may have gotten out of control. It's just not good. Just not good. So we'll see how this plays out. But he said it on CNN. I wonder how the liberals are going to respond to this. Yeah, I still want to see the movie. I mean, I'm curious. I'd like to see it distributed. I'm sure it'll be distributed. I mean, his last movie made $30-40 million. There's distribution companies probably falling all over themselves. In fact, one of the news stories in the media today is how he just signed a distribution deal with the UK's largest independent film distributor for United Kingdom distribution. So, there's no doubt the movie's going to get out there. And the Cannes Film Festival is either this weekend or next week. And this, if this was just pre-Cannes, no pun intended, C-A-A or C-A-N-N-E-S, pre-Cannes PR, a PR stunt, and we've been played like a fiddle, and I think he owes us an apology, frankly, if that's the case. And I'm just letting you know, on this program, I believe that it's more important to be truthful than to toe a party line. It's more important to just, lay it out there and let you know what's going on, and what we found out. I want to give Michael Moore a lot of credit for doing a lot of good work over the years. He's a good guy. He's written great books. I have a lot of respect for him. And well, we'll see how this goes. The in fact, this is Michael Moore's thing. There was an interesting letter to the editor in today's newspaper, and the reason I want to share this with you is because this was in the Burlington Free Press, which is a paper that goes all over the state of Vermont. It's actually owned by Gannett. It used to be an independently owned newspaper. Gannett bought it up. The people who publish USA Today, and it's just the power of writing a letter to the editor. I want to encourage you to do this. The two ways that the revolutionaries fomented the revolution in the United States in the late 1760s and the early 1770s, and were number one by pamphleting, you know, from Thomas Paine's Common Sense, which came a little later in the game, to the early ones by a person who we still don't know who it was, who signed all his pamphlets, Rusticus, and they were plastered all over New England. Most of them railing against the East India Company, led to the 1773, November 1773, I'm pretty sure, Boston Tea Party in response to the Tea Act, which was the tax cut that the British government gave to the East India Company on tea so that they could pull a Walmart and undercut the prices of all the local tea merchants in the United States. Anyhow, the second way was committees of correspondence. They organized committees of correspondence all over the colonies and wrote letters to the editor of newspapers. And the women's suffrage movement did the same thing in the early 19th century and in the early 20th century. The abolitionist movement did the same thing throughout the 19th and early 20th century and the civil rights movement. Here, this letter to the editor from Bruce Conklin here in Vermont. He says, Pakistan has many advanced nuclear weapons controlled by a military that is populated with anti-American Muslim fundamentalists. Pakistan was the prime sponsor of the Taliban and has been a haven for al-Qaeda and Taliban terrorists. Yet Musharraf is a regular visitor to the Bush White House. And he goes on about how Pakistan is supplying weapons-grade uranium to North Korea, Iran, and Libya. So how does Bush respond, he asks. And, you know, he answers himself. He's there. We rewarded Pakistan by declaring them a major non-NATO ally, giving them access to sensitive American military technology, equipment, and training. And he summarizes that Bush's actions are mind-boggling in their hypocrisy, duplicity, and disregard for national security. Now, we should all be writing letters like this to our editors. Get them in the local paper. It's not that hard. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
The permafrost in northern Sweden is becoming less permanent as the earth grows warmer. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Some soil in northern regions has been frozen for years and normally does not thaw out even in the summer. That's changing in the subarctic tundra of northern Sweden, and scientists are watching new plants move in and methane gas leak out. Torben Christensen is a biogeochemist at Sweden's Lund University. He says the annual mean temperature of the subarctic is right around freezing. He says the permafrost can start melting if the long-term temperature goes up by even half a degree.
That's where the stability of the permafrost is on its edge, and you need very small changes in temperature to actually have fairly substantial effects on the permafrost.
A research station in Sweden has compiled data that reveal how warming trends have affected the permafrost. The Abisko Research Station is north of the Arctic Circle, and people there have collected climate readings for more than 100 years. Christensen compared records from 1970 to 2000, and he found some dramatic changes in vegetation during those 30 years. He says wetland plants have moved into areas where the permafrost has disappeared and native tundra vegetation was gone. The soil in the tundra becomes much wetter as the permafrost melts. Those wet conditions produce methane gas during the decomposition of dead vegetation, and methane is a potent greenhouse gas. Christensen and his colleagues say the observations at the Abisko Research Station might be a picture of things to come across the Arctic. If more permafrost melts, more and more of the tundra might start releasing methane gas, and that could magnify the impact of greenhouse gases on global warming. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, it's Tom Hartman with you. I asked the question, I wonder how liberals are going to respond to this. I've found out, we got a whole bunch of folks in our chat room, and it seems to be the consensus is, number one, if Michael Moore pulled a stunt at the expense of Disney, more power to him. Okay. I'll go along with that. And number two, Benedict at Large pointed out, they actually in their community got Red Lobster and some others to drop their advertising in the Limbaugh show. So I stand corrected. Unlike George W. Bush, when I'm wrong, I will admit it. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. And Michael in Atlanta's on the line. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I just wanted to say that I just recently read your book, We the People, and I think it's just fantastic. I think it crystallizes what's going on behind the scenes in politics today, at least with the GOP, and I want to recommend that everybody in the world read this book because it's very important.
Well, thank you, Michael. How'd you find out about it, or how'd you get it?
Oh, I regularly visit your website, and I saw it on there.
Uh-huh.
But I do have a question about that.
Mm-hmm.
I know in your book you suggest that we need to reinvigorate the Democratic Party, the Democrats.
I'd go so far as to say we need to infiltrate it and take it over the way the cons did the Republican Party 20 years ago.
Right, and I see the logic in that. But I do have a question about the current nominee. And I don't know if this has been discussed on the, of course, he hasn't been confirmed yet, John Kerry, but I was wondering, you talked about in the book about how there are Democrats who are basically selling out to some of the ideas of
the DLC Democrats. Yeah, the DLC Democrats, Democratic
right,
Leadership Council. Yeah.
Republicrats.
Yeah.
We have one in Georgia. His name's Zell Miller.
Yep.
But anyway, I was wondering if you think that is this even possible that we really put our views back into this party before this election in 2004? And is Kerry likely the worst possible candidate for doing that?
Well, number one, I don't think Kerry's the worst possible candidate. I mean, if what the cons say is true, that he has the most liberal voting record in the entire United States Senate, he may well be the best possible candidate. It may be that a lot of what that a lot of people are saying, well, you know, he's not strong enough in the war, this, that, and the other thing. I mean, there are certain things he had to do to get elected, and I'm willing to cut him some slack on that. You know, this is a national election. Number one. Number two, yes, I think it's absolutely, not only is it possible, we had Jeff from Denver was talking, you know, a year ago, one of our regular callers, a year ago, he was saying he was, Nader all the way, Green all the way, and he called in a couple days ago and said that he's infiltrated his local Democratic Party and actually got them to change some of the positions in their platform that they're helping write. So I think, absolutely, I think it's possible, and I think there's time, and I encourage you to get out there and do it now. Michael, thanks for the call. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Talk radio for the rest of us.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
It's crunch time for SBC Communications and the Communications Workers of America. The company's 100,000-strong union-represented service and support staff may strike as early as tomorrow unless terms for a new contract can be agreed upon. The two sides are still far apart on health insurance premiums for the current workforce as well as on issues of job outsourcing. If a strike does take place, SBC is expected to draft non-union staff and management to fill service and support jobs, including 12-hour shifts 7 days a week without overtime. That may run afoul of labor law, at least in states like California, where the rules exempt managerial and professional staff from overtime pay, provided they're engaged in their normal duties. Fixing phone lines and providing directory assistance may invoke this clause. SBC could try to get around this by petitioning the federal government for relief.
Thursday afternoon, more than 250 graduate students, undergrads, and clerical staff marched through historic Columbia University Library carrying signs reading Union Now. For the past 3 weeks, some 1,900 members of the Graduate Student Employees Union representing teaching and research assistants have been on strike. Columbia administration officials are refusing to recognize their union. Stephen Twilley, a second-year graduate student in Italian, says the university works because TAs do.
We are workers too, and just because we are also students, that doesn't at all get rid of the fact that we are workers and that these are jobs, and we don't have a choice to not take these jobs unless we're getting support from somewhere else.
Allegations of slave-like labor conditions in U.S. military camps in Iraq. This from Indian workers who returned home this month after making an escape. The workers say they were promised by a private contractor that they'd be put to work in Kuwait and didn't realize they were actually in Iraq until it was too late. Outside of mortar shelling and errant gunfire, the workers claim they were held against their will by the U.S. Army. One claims he was beaten by a soldier when he asked to go home. They also say they were paid less than a quarter of what they were promised for their work. The Indian government has formally demanded an explanation from the United States. Its ambassador to India says an investigation is now open into the charges.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study by the Environmental Integrity Project and Public Citizen found the nation's top power plant polluters are also Bush supporters. Only 5% of facilities produced 43% of sulfur dioxide, 31% of carbon dioxide, and 43% of mercury pollution. Since 1999, the 30 biggest utility companies have poured $6.6 million into the Bush presidential campaign and the Republican National Committee. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Writers used to sacrifice for their art, subsisting on stale biscuits and cheap wine, letting their health go as they wrote day and night. No such suffering for Carol Matthews, though. She's a British writer of what is called edgy romantic comedy novels aimed at young contemporary women. And rather than sacrifice, she has simply sold her artistic self to Ford Motor Company. In the latest intrusion of corporate advertising into every nook and cranny of everyone's existence, Ford has paid a pile of money to Miss Matthews in exchange for her pledge literally to write the company's products into her romantic novels. It seems that Ford is eager to pitch its Fiesta car to 28 to 35-year-old women on their way up the career ladder. Apparently, this is the very demographic that Matthews' books reach. Chick lit, it's known in the biz. So Ford has become a literary character. For example, in a special short story written for the company, she drops in a reference to, quote, whizzing around Buckinghamshire in Imogene, a rather snazzy Ford Fiesta complete with 6-CD changer, air conditioning, and thoroughly comfy seats. Art meets ad copy, and ad copy wins by a knockout. Matthews, who also is appearing in ads for Ford, says she's not troubled by this corporatization of her work. Quote, I've been very pleased with Ford in that they haven't put any constraints on my writing at all, she gushed. Well, good gollies, Ms. Matthews, I'm sure they won't, as long as you keep writing breathless copy like that. But what if you tried to, you know, test your corporate freedom by writing something like, whizzing around Buckinghamshire, my snazzy Ford Fiesta sputtered and died on me again, just as the 6-CD changer went on the fritz and spewed blue smoke in my face. This is Jim Hightower saying, who would buy a particular car just because some writer mentions it in a novel? And Ford wonders why it's falling behind Japanese car makers?
Toyota owners, tired of paying high gas prices? Well, how about paying nothing? That's right. Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Plus, 1,000 more will win $50 fill-ups. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer to enter the sweepstakes. You'll get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota-trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and ask about our May tire and service offers.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void or prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 or older with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at Toyota.com/owners.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
He's the man. corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Happy Friday. End of the week, TGIF, Shabbat Shalom. An article by Philip Kennicott in the Washington Post was forwarded to me by one of our listeners. A couple of lines here that are really worth quoting. Among the corrosive lies a nation at war tells itself is that the glory, the lofty goals announced beforehand, the victories, the liberation of the oppressed belongs to the country as a whole, but the failure, the accidents, the uncounted civilian dead, the crimes and atrocities is always exceptional. Noble goals flow naturally from a noble people. The occasional act of barbarity is always the work of individuals, unaccountable, confusing, and indigestible to the national conscience. But, he adds, these photos are us. Every errant smart bomb, every dead civilian, every sodomized prisoner is ours. And he summarizes, not quite 50 years ago, Amy Cesari, a poet and writer from Martinique, wrote in his Discourse on Colonialism, "First, we must study how colonialism works to decivilize the colonizers, to brutalize him in the true sense of the word, to degrade him, to awaken him to buried instincts, to covetousness, violence, race hatred, and moral relativism." And then he asked the question, are we decivilized yet? Are we brutes yet? Of course not, say our leaders. Our leaders. Bush administration flip-flopping on drug reimportation. I got a conservative alert here for you. We've got some information on Alan Greenspan, the slave labor in Iraq alert. Lots and lots going on. We'll get to it. Also, your calls, if you'd like to call in, 1-866-889-8894. Be a part of the program. If you have comments, thoughts, suggestions, arguments, discussions, disagreements. I also wanted to get into what is single-payer health care. I raised this a couple days ago. We did an entire show on it, in fact, a couple of shows on it, maybe, I don't know, a year ago, early on in this program. But worth revisiting quickly anyway. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Tom. Just got through watching the Senate and Rummy.
Tell me what happened. I was on the air. I missed it.
Well, as you might guess, the Democratic senators and a few of the Republicans, McCain, actually put him to task and asked him hard questions, none of which he answered. He kept referring to the fact that there are investigations going on, and every question they asked, he would turn to one or the other and kind of vaguely say, well, those will be answered when the investigations are over. Lindsey Graham, a Republican of I don't even know where he's from, said he wanted to prepare the American people because there are videos along with these still pictures, which are going to be released, videos of prisoner abuses.
Oh,
and he said the worst is yet to come. Bottom line, no surprises. Donnie Rumsfeld is going to keep his job. And this administration is going to once again find itself at the upper levels responsible for nothing. And once again, we're going to prove to the world that the buck doesn't stop anywhere in Bushy land. You know, there's
no, and never has. Yeah, for his whole entire life, never has. From his drunk driving conviction when he went to his father and he said, okay, you want to take me on? Let's go outside and do it mano to mano. To getting arrested for cocaine and having to do community service and then later lying about it, to showing up for getting into the National Guard on his daddy's ticket and then not showing up in Alabama. You know, I mean, just there's a long, long list.
Yeah,
and this guy has never taken responsibility for it.
The most pointed questions that Rumsfeld would not answer or deflected were the questions of who is in command here? Who is telling these people in this prison to prepare the prisoners? He completely passed it over or said there's investigations going on. There's no buck to stop in the Bush administration.
Well, this is the I won't characterize it as an argument. The discussion, the disagreement that Louise and I were having this morning, it was, you know, she was saying he's got to get rid of Rumsfeld. I mean, he's got to go. The guy is a bum. You know, the buck has got to. And I said, yeah, frankly, I'd rather see him stick around because if they get rid of him, then George Bush is going to be able to say to the American people, hey, we had a problem, we took care of it.
I felt
all
the
as
same
well.
Way about Trent Lott, actually, when he was having his difficulties. He should still be there so we can hold somebody accountable.
Yeah, I mean, let's hold up the ugly face of this and say, here, look at this. I mean, you know, the mask has been taken off. Now is not the time to get rid of them. But, you know, although I do agree with Louise that in a perfect world, you know, he should be gone. He should be toast. But
there's no responsibility for anybody at the upper levels.
They're not taking
it. It's shameful. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for the call, Chris. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number, 12 minutes past the hour. And here is speaking of blame and responsibility, the conservative pundits have been commenting and pontificating about who is responsible. Who is responsible for what happened in Abu Ghraib in the prison there in Iraq? Who might be responsible? And they've come up with four villains. Four villains. I'm going to list them for you. You probably hadn't anticipated this. But number one, according to Linda Chavez, the syndicated columnist and Fox News political channel analyst, the woman who was nominated for what, Department of Labor, I think, or something like that, and the Bush administration had to pull out because she had an illegal alien working for her as a maid. Linda Chavez and Ann Coulter, of course. The villain, according to them, the villain here is women. Linda Chavez says on the Heritage Foundation's website, townhall.com, and in the Baltimore Sun, but one factor that may have contributed, but which I doubt investigators will even want to consider, is whether the presence of women in the unit actually encourages more misbehavior, especially of the sexual nature that the pictures reveal. It's all the women's fault. Ann Coulter goes even farther. She says, and I quote, "I think the other point that no one is making about the abuse photos is just the disproportionate number of women involved, including a girl general running the entire operation. I mean, this is a lesson, you know, 1,000,047 on why women shouldn't be in the military. In addition to not being able to even carry a medium-sized backpack, women are too vicious." She said that on the Hannity and Combs program May 5th. Linda Chavez's thing that women were responsible for this was also on May 5th. Maybe it was the talking point of the day from Roger Ailes, who knows. So that's villain number one in this case. Who's responsible for the torture or abuse? Rami doesn't call it torture, he calls it abuse, in the Abu Ghraib prison that has led to the death of prisoners. Louise makes the comment, "We judge others by ourselves, so Coulter must think of herself as vicious." That's a good one. She says, "Women are too vicious." Yeah, we do. We really, you know, people tend to judge others by themselves. They assume everybody is just like them. Well, the second group, according to the conservative press, that's responsible for what happened in Iraq, are feminists. Not just women, but a particular type of women. George Naumeier, a managing editor of the American Spectator, one of the more well-known and well-read of the extreme right-wing publications, writes, "The image of that female guard smoking away as she joins gleefully in the disgraceful melee, like one of the guys, is a cultural outgrowth of a feminist culture which encourages female barbarians. G.I. Janes are kicking around patriarchal Muslims in Iraq. This is Feminist Majority Foundation President Eleanor Smeal's vision come to life. It's the feminists who are to blame." He goes on to add, "Feminists are good at creating a culture that produces equal opportunity abusers," Donnelly says. He's quoting somebody else. "What happened at Abu Ghraib is also happening in feminist America," she adds, pointing to an American Press article from last month, or Associated Press article from last month, "on a disturbing trend around the country. Girls are turning to violence more often and with terrifying intensity. Yes, it's all because of feminists." Villain number two in the scandals in Iraq. Villain number three, Muslims. Cal Thomas, Fox News Channel's After Hours with Cal Thomas and syndicated columnist. And I got to say, our local newspaper runs his column. This guy is about as off the edge as they get. And here's Cal Thomas's take on it. He says some Arab commentators are repeating the myth that the West has once again humiliated Muslims. Oh, it's a myth. If there has been humiliation, it isn't the fault of the West. It is Muslims' fault. Yes, that's right. Cal Thomas blamed what happened in Abu Ghraib on Muslims. Not on Iraq, not on Saddam. I mean, that at least he probably could have, you know, with a little less contorted logic come up with. Not that I would agree with it, but, you know, no, it's Muslims' fault. It's the fault of the people in the mosque in Boston. It's the fault of the people who show up at the mosque in the Philippines. It's the people. It is Muslims' fault. He goes on to say they took trillions of dollars in oil money. Apparently, he thinks Muslims took the trillions of dollars. It's actually a few Arab countries. The leaders of a few Arab countries who were installed by the United States government, by and large. With help from many European countries, particularly the United Kingdom, after World War II, by and large. Anyhow, he says, it is Muslims' fault. They took trillions of dollars in oil money, and instead of building a culture dedicated to elevating their people, including women, they have squandered it on agendas and adventures that had the opposite result. It's Muslims' fault. And number four in our hit parade, who else is responsible for the horrors of Abu Ghraib? Number four, the academic left. It's those pinko liberals who are teaching in our colleges. They're the ones responsible for sodomizing people with broomsticks and light wands in the prisons in Iraq. Yes, indeed. Here's James Taranto, editor of the Wall Street Journal's opinion page. I'm sorry, opinionjournal.com, the Wall Street Journal's opinionjournal.com. He says, the New York Times profiles some of the soldiers implicated in abuse of Iraqi prisoners at Abu Ghraib, and to be honest, they sound like a bunch of losers. He says, the reason, and so, okay, so these folks are losers, so why are they in the military? He says, for elite universities to drop anti-military policies would be one constructive step so that the military would have an easier time signing up the best and the brightest young Americans. It's time the academic left showed some patriotic responsibility and acknowledged that the defense of the country, which includes the defense of their own academic freedom, is more important than the issue du jour. He says, James Taranto, editor of the Wall Street Journal's opinionjournal.com, says, the folks to blame are the academic left, those liberals in universities who don't let the military openly solicit on campus. Don't, you know, they're not allowing the army to come in and sign up folks. Instead you gotta go into town and do it. That's all their fault. It's all those liberals in the universities. That's why we've got this problem. Yeah. Aren't you just so glad to know that the right is really giving this serious thought? 20 minutes past the hour. This is Tom Hartman with you, the True People's Radio.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
to discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface, and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. It's a shame the vocals in that thing are so hard to hear because it's a great song, but nobody can figure out what they're talking about. So, anyway, it's a pastiche. 25 minutes past the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program, 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to be on the program, Indian workers claim they were forced to do menial labor. Here, a scandal that's got India up in arms. I'll tell you about that in a few minutes. First, let's take a call from Rob in Newtown, Pennsylvania. Is that Rob Call with opednews.com?
It is. How you doing, Tom?
Hey, Rob, I'm great. Did you pick up my story on calling for a draft?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you cretin! It's Uncommon Dreams. It went up Wednesday.
Wednesday? I missed it.
Yeah,
I had a funeral on Thursday.
Yeah, we haven't sent it out to everybody yet. We're going to do that over the weekend, so you'll get it.
Well, you know, I spoke to you this morning about the stats on the population of the world, and I came up with an article today. First thing I want to talk about, too.
Mm-hmm.
I figured out Bush is the most hated man in the history of the world.
Yeah, numerically.
I think so.
Yeah, because, you know, when Jack Kennedy, you and I are old enough to remember when Jack Kennedy was inaugurated in 61, actually, in January 61, there were fewer than half as many people on the planet as there are today.
Yeah.
I mean, there were only 3 billion people on the planet in 1960.
Now we have 1.5 billion Muslims, 98% of them hate them.
Yeah.
Them alone, let alone the rest of the intelligent thinking world.
Well, you got a billion Catholics, and the Pope is on record saying that George Bush is guilty of murder, both for capital punishment and for attacking Iraq. I mean, he hasn't specifically named George Bush, but he did with the Iraq War, actually. And you've got just several billion people who are just looking at us, going, huh?
The other thing I wanted to talk about is these hearings going on this afternoon, because Rumsfeld is there sitting in front of Republicans and Lieberman going, we're wonderful. Isn't it terrible what a handful of bad little people did?
Yeah.
And Rumsfeld's, you know, just talking along that. This is all a distraction. This is not about the people who did this. This is about privatization of the Army and Iraq and a policy that led to creating a situation where, of deniability, where Bush and the administration could say it wasn't us, it was private companies. Well, they created this situation by using Iraq as an experimental field where they could just throw in all their theories about privatization. And it's the privatization, these non-military people in the prisons that perpetrated this and encouraged it.
Yeah, although, you know, to not speak in defense of George W. Bush, I mean, the privatization of these processes has dramatically sped up under these guys. And one of the reasons that Rummy said that we don't need more soldiers is because he knew that he could hire an infinite number of mercenaries. There's 15 to 20,000 paid mercenaries.
The amount of Brits.
Well, three times. There's only 6,500 Brits.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know,
and that's Wolfowitz. Wolfowitz is one of the ones strongest on.
Yeah, but see, this really started under Reagan, and Clinton continued it.
So what I see happening in these hearings this afternoon is you've got Rumsfeld and his generals saying America is a wonderful place. Our brave soldiers are not bad people. They're hiding behind the brave soldiers, and they are brave soldiers. And there are only a handful of bad apples who did this. But it was the system that created it, that encouraged it, that allowed it. And now they're saying there are a huge amount of more pictures that are going to be emerging.
Yeah. In other words, this is the predictable result of taking radical conservative economic theory and governance theory
and experimenting
and applying it. Yeah. And we are the great experiment. Iraq is the great experiment. They've got a flat rate tax, 15% flat rate income tax in Iraq. They're trying that out there. They're selling. They privatized all of the Iraqi industries except oil, and they're you know, that's next on their radar screen. It's nuts. And then people of Iraq are not standing for it.
Another piece, Rumsfeld stated verbatim, the president was blindsided by this. Now, the other thing I want to get at is this whole thing is about asymmetrical warfare.
Yeah, Rob, stick it. Yeah, I know you got a point there you want to make. Hang on just a second. I'll let you make it right after the break here. We got to pay a few bills. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to be on Friday afternoon, 29 minutes past the hour. I don't know if it's 2 where you are. It is here in Vermont. We'll be right back.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
It's crunch time for SBC Communications and the Communications Workers of America. The company's 100,000-strong union represented service and support staff may strike as early as tomorrow unless terms for a new contract can be agreed upon. The two sides are still far apart on health insurance premiums for the current workforce as well as on issues of job outsourcing. If a strike does take place, SBC is expected to draft non-union staff and management to fill service and support jobs, including 12-hour shifts 7 days a week without overtime. That may run afoul of labor law, at least in states like California, where the rules exempt managerial and professional staff from overtime pay, provided they're engaged in their normal duties. Fixing phone lines and providing directory assistance may invoke this clause. SBC could try to get around this by petitioning the federal government for relief.
Thursday afternoon, more than 250 graduate students, undergrads, and clerical staff marched through historic Columbia University Library carrying signs reading Union Now. For the past 3 weeks, some 1,900 members of the Graduate Student Employees Union representing teaching and research assistants have been on strike. Columbia administration officials are refusing to recognize their union. Stephen Twilley, a second-year graduate student in Italian, says the university works because TAs do.
we are workers too. And just because we are also students, that doesn't at all get rid of the fact that we are workers and that these are jobs, and we don't have a choice to not take these jobs unless we're getting support from somewhere else.
Allegations of slave-like labor conditions in U.S. military camps in Iraq, this from Indian workers who returned home this month after making an escape. The workers say they were promised by a private contractor that they'd be put to work in Kuwait and didn't realize they were actually in Iraq until it was too late. Outside of mortar shelling and errant gunfire, the workers claim they were held against their will by the U.S. Army. One claims he was beaten by a soldier when he asked to go home. They also say they were paid less than a quarter of what they were promised for their work. The Indian government has formally demanded an explanation from the United States. Its ambassador to India says an investigation is now open into the charges.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study by the Environmental Integrity Project and Public Citizen found the nation's top power plant polluters are also Bush supporters. Only 5% of facilities produced 43% of sulfur dioxide, 31% of carbon dioxide, and 43% of mercury pollution. Since 1999, the 30 biggest utility companies have poured $6.6 million into the Bush presidential campaign and the Republican National Committee. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Kathy, I said as we boarded a Greyhound in Pittsburgh, Michigan seems like a dream to me now. It took me 4 days to hitchhike from Saginaw. I've come to look for.
And welcome back. 26 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast. And we are talking with Rob Call, publisher of opednews.com. Rob, you wanted to make one more point?
Yeah, that's the fact is that what Rumsfeld and the generals have done is operated in conventional warfare in Iraq, while what's happening is asymmetric warfare. Now, the problem is, the Pentagon, the military knows all about it. You go to the Defense University, there's tons of stuff written about asymmetrical warfare. One of the primary weapons and strategies of asymmetrical warfare is the use of the media and the press. Now, when Rumsfeld gave his first press conference the other day about it, one reporter asked him, and he said, "Are you talking about managing PR?" As though this was some strange idea or inappropriate for a reporter to ask the defense secretary.
Right.
Well, the fact is, it is one of the most significant and powerful tools, and it's clear that it has been used because of their inability to understand it to destroy and wreck the Iraq effort, whatever good was going to come of that. And, you know, within the military, they're calling it the six, they're calling the grunts that are in trouble, that they're pointing the finger at to distract from the real problem, which is the leadership. They're calling those grunts the six idiots who lost the war.
Yeah.
But they're not the ones who lost the war. The people who lost the war are the ones who, in January, saw that there was a problem, stuck their head in the ground, and hid from it. It's the senators, the Republican senators on these committee hearings happening this afternoon who are the apologists for this stupidity.
Yeah, this isn't the first time this has happened. You know, Lieutenant Calley's commanding officer, who was a captain, was right there at My Lai with him. And Calley was the one who got convicted. I mean, you know, he only served, I think, 7 days in jail. Nixon pardoned him. But his captain was never prosecuted, and his captain was actually there and actually shot some of the people.
Yeah.
And you know, it didn't go up the chain of command. It stopped at Calley, and of course, none of the men under Calley were prosecuted. He was, it has to do with whoever makes the press, right? Whoever, you know, whoever the attention of the press gets focused on, that's who's going to get nailed. And you know, these poor kids who had their pictures taken, and one of the questions that I have is, did they say, "Hey, please take my picture right now," or did somebody say, "Hey, would you please pose? I'd like to take your picture." And if it's the latter, I'd like to know who that person was and why they did it. But in any case, it's we have a long history in the United States, and it may just be human nature. You know, it may just be human nature. We have a long history of scapegoating at the bottom and not letting things go up the
The real question is going to be, will the mainstream media let this pass and let them just focus on these little guys? Are they going to really go after the problem at the root? We've got an iceberg that's about to morph into a volcano.
Yeah, and my prediction is that the mainstream media will simply focus on the guys at the bottom, and that's going to be the end of it. But we'll see how it plays out. Rob, thanks for the call.
Keep it going.
Yeah, I shall. You too. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, 23 minutes before the hour. Did you hear this story? Those listening on our web stream caught this because it was in the newscast, but those listening on radio stations would have missed it because it's during the local minutes when local radio stations run their commercials or their own local news. Four Indians said Wednesday they were held against their will by U.S. troops. This is an AP story by V.M. Thomas. Held against their will by U.S. troops in Iraq. This is, you know, being held against your will, it's like, that's called slavery. In order to do menial work in an army camp amid insurgent attacks, they signed up in August with a recruiting agency in Kuwait. They were told they'd be paid $1,000. I'm sorry, $890 a month. They were told that they would be paid $890 a month in Kuwait to work. These are people who came from India looking for work. And instead, the Army paid them $200 a month. But beyond that, here's what one of them said. They were taken to an Iraqi city near Mosul, or of Mosul, the northern Iraqi city of Mosul. And a guy, one of them, his name is Faisal, he said, "There were some 20 Indians in the bus. Once we knew that we were inside Iraq, we protested." Right? They see they signed up for a job in Kuwait. They thought they were giving. They thought they were being given employment inside Kuwait. He says there were 20 of us in the bus. Once we realized we were inside Iraq, we protested. But the Americans told us that they had paid a Kuwait agency $1,000 for each man, and therefore it was a must that we work for them. Sorry, you're coming with us. We paid for you. The camp was the target of frequent missile attacks by Iraqi fighters. He says these guys, all Muslims, were forced to do menial jobs, including washing clothes. One said, Saha Jehanan, says, "When I refused to work and told an officer that I wanted to go back, he beat me up." The Indian government... The government of India is now demanding, officially demanding, an explanation from Washington, D.C. We shall see if they get it. Today, May 7th, 1945, by the way, Germany signed an unconditional surrender at Allied headquarters in Reims, France, to take effect the following day, ending the European conflict in World War II. Thought you want to know that. Our quote for the day from Abraham Lincoln: "Force is all conquering, but its victories are short-lived." Force is all conquering, but its victories are short-lived. Abraham Lincoln, our quote for the day. The Bush administration is flip-flopping on a flip-flop. For those of you interested in taking, you know, tracking the flip-flops and the flip-flops of the flip-flops, first, the Bush administration opposed allowing American seniors to purchase low-cost prescription drugs from Canada. Then, day before yesterday, Secretary of Health Tommy Thompson kind of backtracked on that. He said that he would not stand in the way of a bill to make importing prescription drugs legal. This was reported in the Boston Globe. In fact, here's what the Boston Globe said. They said, "Adding election year momentum to an issue that is popular among seniors, President Bush's chief health care official, Health and Human Services Secretary Tommy Thompson, said he would recommend that Bush not stand in the way of a bill to make importing prescription drugs legal." Okay, so first the administration's opposed to it. Now they're not opposed to it. And in fact, they said, you know, this is the Boston Globe noted, "Thompson's remarks yesterday were the first indication that the pressure is beginning to erode opposition within the administration. Till now, the FDA, part of the Department of Health and Human Services, has vigorously fought widespread importation of drugs, deeming it illegal." Well, another day passed, and the administration changed their mind again. Now we learn that the Health and Human Services Department is saying, well, you guys have mischaracterized what Tommy Thompson said. Tony Jewell, the reporter or a spokesman for HHS, Secretary Tommy Thompson, says, reporters, this from Wisconsin Radio Network, reporters mischaracterized what Thompson said about the importation of prescription drugs. It was reported that Thompson said the legalization of imported prescription drugs was inevitable, but Jewell said that's not quite right. He says, quote, that's a mischaracterization of what he said. What he said is that he fully expects Congress to pass some reimport bill. In other words, he's not in favor of it. He's not going to allow it. He just thinks it's inevitable. When is this administration going to give us a straight story on anything? On anything. I mean, pick a topic. How much is the war in Iraq going to cost? We were told it would be $1.7 billion. We're now pushing $200 billion. I mean, just imagine the effect that that would have if the 200 largest cities in America, which takes us down, by the way, to pretty small towns. I mean, Burlington, Vermont is like the 154th largest city in America, and it has a population of about 70,000 people. So the 200 largest cities in America would probably, I'm guessing, would take us down to cities of about 55,000, 60,000 people. If those 200 cities each got $1 billion, they could build mass transit systems. They could build hospitals. They could rebuild their schools. They could build infrastructure. They could put in new water systems. They could upgrade their septic systems. They could upgrade their power systems. We could put solar panels on roofs of houses. We could put up windmills. We could make the conversion to new forms of energy. I mean, do you have any idea how much $200 billion is? It's mind-boggling. Consider how much $59.7 billion is. I mean, you know, it's $1 billion is $1 million 1,000 times. $59.7 billion. Think what that could do. Think what you could do with that in the United States. Keep in mind, the entire budget for human welfare services at the federal level in the United States is less than $40 million. All of it combined. Everything. $59.7 billion. Now, why do I raise that number? Well, $59.7 billion happens to be the amount of money this year, that the drug companies of America are going to make in added profit over what they would make if people paid the same cost for drugs here that we pay in Canada, that they pay in Canada. This is no... people go, what? $60 billion? Yes, $60 billion, $59.7 billion is the difference... Is the additional amount of money that Americans are paying drug companies for pharmaceuticals over what they would pay if they bought them in Canada. And drugs in Canada are sold at a profit for the drug companies. And you wonder why the pharmaceutical industry has the ability to pass out tens and hundreds of millions of dollars to politicians, political parties, and lobbying efforts all around the United States. $59 billion. So you invest a few hundred million in politicians. $100 million at the local level. I know here in Vermont, there have been three or four different efforts here in Vermont, the legislative attempts to make it possible for the state to buy drugs from Canada, run buses up there. Bernie Sanders, the first congressman, first politician to actually load up buses with seniors and drive them to Canada. Here in Vermont to buy drugs, pharmaceuticals, let's say. I suppose they have pretty good pot up there, too, but that's not. They were going after pharmaceuticals. Anyhow, Bernie was the first one to get them up there. And there was also a bill before the legislature here in Vermont to require that Blue Cross Blue Shield remain nonprofit instead of going for-profit. And there's been a bunch of different things that have had to do with profits of the drug industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the hospital industry, the healthcare industry in general. And almost right across the board, they've been shot down. And why? Because even in a little teeny tiny state like this where the legislators are volunteers, I mean, they're paid something like $16,000, $17,000 a year, and they're only in session from January to March. We have a part-time citizen legislature. And much of what they're paid is to cover the cost of coming to Montpelier and camping out for the three worst months of the winter. That even in a little state like this, big bucks are coming down from these lobbying firms from the pharmaceutical industry. So what's the solution? In my opinion, the solution is a single-payer healthcare system. Very simple, very straightforward. It is the way they do it in Canada. It's the way they do it in countries literally all over the world. Spain does it this way. Canada does it this way. Germany does it this way. Very straightforward system. A single payer is one entity acting as the administrator or payer. In this case, it would be the government. They collect all the health care fees. They pay all the health care costs. Very straightforward. Right now in the U.S. system, there are literally tens of thousands of different health care organizations, HMOs, billing agencies, insurance companies, blah, 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 blah. And having so every single one is generating their own fees. There's all this paperwork. If you have just one, you save a fortune. The Congressional Budget Office predicts that single-payer health care would reduce overall health costs by $225 billion just in 2004. $225 billion that we would save. In other words, you know, put another way, $225 billion is going into the hands and the pockets of for-profit corporations. To keep giving us a healthcare system that is the most expensive in the world, that has not produced the best results in the world. We like to say we have the world's best healthcare system. I'm sorry, we don't. If you use infant mortality as a measurement, if you use average lifespan as a measurement, if you use the number of people who use healthcare services as a measurement, we obviously don't. We may have some of the fanciest machines, but they're all over the world. The GAO predicted an administrative savings of 10%, $150 billion just in 2002. That was an earlier study. H.R. 1200 is actually a bill to propose this. Businesses would see their costs go down. Everybody would be covered. We wouldn't have 40 million uninsured people in the United States any longer. It would work. It would work. And the simple proof of it is that it's working all over the world. It's very simple, very straightforward. 10 minutes before the hour is the Tom Hartman program. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely, because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Big institutions have a lot of consumer power, and they can put it to good use. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. More individuals and families are choosing to buy organic food, hybrid cars, and recycled paper over less environmentally sound alternatives. Getting governments and universities to buy green products is more difficult. Lisa Masney of the World Watch Institute recently looked at institutional purchasing power. She says individual actions are important, but big institutions have an enormous impact.
For example, universities or government agencies, the United Nations, the World Bank, you know, all these very, very large institutions that make buying decisions every day. They use paper, they have food in their cafeterias, they have fleet vehicles. They're making these kinds of decisions on a much larger level.
Masney says if large institutions push for green products, it can change a whole industry. One example was a 1993 federal initiative that required government agencies to purchase computers that met high energy standards.
And as a result of this directive, it set into motion sort of a massive overhaul of the consumer market, and manufacturers had to respond to this. And largely as a result of the increased demand on the government side, today about 95% of all monitors, 80% of all computers, and 99% of all printers sold in North America now meet ENERGY STAR standards.
Masney says individuals should choose environmentally friendly products, but pushing for changes in institutional purchasing will really force changes in the market. For more information about this story or others you hear on Earthwatch Radio, visit our website at ewradio.org. That's ewradio.org. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I lived with them on Montague Street in a basement down the stairs. There was music in the cafes at night and revolution in the air. Well, he started into dealing with slaves and something inside of him died. She had to sell everything she owned and froze up inside. And when it all came crashing down, I became withdrawn. The only thing I knew how to do was keep on keeping on like a bird that flew.
There you go. Keep on keeping on. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman with you It's 4 minutes before the hour. We're almost to the top of the hour here. For more information on Nash on single payer health care, the group Physicians for National Health Care Program, PNHP, has a great website on this, www.pnhp.org, if you want to check it out. And 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And to wrap up the day, let's go to, did you really call yourself a hot Hungarian, Roberta?
No, I called myself a hot Hungarian, a Hungarian hothead.
Ah, thank you.
Hungarian hothead. No, I am not hot lips here, but far from it. But, you know, Tom, I called for a couple reasons. Before you hook in, please let me state both of them. I was wondering about the single health care thing, if it does anything to curb prices. And the second is that I did go yesterday to the library and had the handsome bearded one rip off some of your stuff on the doohinky computer there. I don't do that stuff. And I was really impressed with your work, and I didn't know about all these things you've done, so I congratulate you on that. Your blurbs from your books here, your illustrations are very fun, and right on, Kachaton. But I notice you don't name a solution for it all, and of course that's not your purview. I just want to say that beards rock and truth rules.
Okay.
Keep the beard, and Thomas Jefferson is dead, though. Mickey Mouse lives.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe we can bring him back. I'm doing my best to resuscitate him.
I know. What was your
first question about national? Oh, does it control prices? Yeah, it does, because what it does is it creates a national competitive system. You have the pharmaceutical companies are having to compete with each other on a national basis rather than just, you know, controlling markets the way they do now. So it does control prices, and it has in all the countries where it's been tried.
Happy birthday.
Oh, thanks, Roberta.
Okay. All right, bye.
All right, have a great weekend. Thanks for calling. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music. Shelby with RadioPower.org, and Ben with White Rose Society, and Mike Toth, who put together our archives. Thanks to our sponsors, particularly Small Dog Electronics. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up, and thanks to you for listening. Tune in next week, same time, same place. Have a great weekend. See you then.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly, and they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat organic. If you're going to drink.